Tuesday last week, we had the department in front of us, but it was about the Auditor General's report, and they gave us a progress report. We agreed that there's outstanding issues, and time was not on our side last week. And we agreed that we will have a follow-up meeting on the progress report and outstanding issues. For today, we are going to deal with the new budget, vote number 19. And after that, then we will engage the department on this issue, on the budget, because we don't want things to repeat itself like last year. Now the acting commissioner will lead and introduce the delegation. But let me also introduce our members, because some of you don't know the members. I'm starting with Baba Peter. Mr. Peter is from the Eastern Cape. And then Mr. Mahote is from the Western Cape. Mr. Sele from KwaZulu-Natal. Menawa from the Northwest. Nkosi Kolo is from KwaZulu-Natal. Me Winnie Guenya from Gauteng. Mr. James Bell from the Western Cape. And Bishop Tolo is from the Limpopo province. And my name is Dennis Bloom. I am from the Free State. I am going to... Why are you smiling, Sam? I'm from the Free State. You are also from the Free State. All right. So I am going to hand over to Sijabu, so that Sijabu might take us through to, and then we can interact. Sijabu, over to you.
Honorable members, thank you and good morning. Thank you for affording us the opportunity to introduce the delegation from the Department of Correctional Services. Starting on my right here, it's Carol Stradom in the Commissioner's Office. And on my left, I have James Schreiner, who's the Chief Deputy Commissioner, Management Services, but head of and I have Ms. Mareka. Ms. Mareka is the Deputy Commissioner of Finance. And at the first row, we have Salero Mvana from the Ministry. We have Mr. Dillingham, the acting CDC Finance, but CDC Correction. And it gives me pleasure to introduce a brand new member of the executive, Alfred Sedwane, who is the Chief Deputy Commissioner of Corporate Services. I hope I haven't left anyone. I don't see our other members will come from the Commissioner's Office.
Yeah. Well, let me also acknowledge the presence of President in the meeting. They are always part and parcel when it comes to budget. They are always part and parcel of our meeting. You are welcome there. And what is the name again? It's Peter Erasmus, yeah, of Treasury. You are welcome, let me say. Over to you, sister.
Sorry. Thank you very much, Chair. I'm going to do the introductory remarks. and then we will have two presentations. The first one will be about the business, which will be led by the Chief Deputy Commissioner, and the second one will be on the budget, which will be led by the Deputy Commissioner, Ms. Marika. Thank you, Chairperson. We are grateful that the committee gave us the opportunity to present our budget and strategic plan. We also appreciate and respect the oversight role of the committee, and we trust that the engagement today will enrich the documents that will be presented today for final presentation. As a department chairperson, the Executive Management Committee and the Ministry have over the past month been looking at our performance critically in an objective way. Because chairperson, our aim is to improve the performance. We have had extensive review and analysis of the performance at all areas in the past 3 financial years. And this introspection was underpinned by a committee to look at performance of the organization in a very objective manner and avoid the temptation to deny the existence of programs where they exist, but also affording the department the opportunity to highlight the achievements which have happened in the past years. And therefore, Chairperson, this review has shown that while the department has performed well in some areas as the formulation of the new strategic direction and policy development, there remain challenges in the areas of policy implementation and compliance, ensuring that we want to ensure that internal control of the policies exists. So this is part of the work that we've been doing. Management views some of the areas in the audit qualification report, as we did present here last, as requiring us that we look at our compliance. When we present our strategic plan this year, Chair, you will see that the approach is different. We have found that there is a need for an integrated approach and coordination, first within the department, but also to look at the clusters that can support us, and at bodies such as the Treasury and Auditor General and the Department of Public Service and Administration. It was for that reason, Chairperson, that this year, in our planning of the strategic plan, we went away as a department, having the regions and the national office and all the relevant role players coming together to do the planning. But also, Chairperson, we also invited Treasury, we invited the Auditor General, and invited the Department of Public Service and Administration to assist us and critique our way of planning while we are still planning, rather than come at the end. So this process has shown us that we cannot work alone. We need to work in an integrated fashion, and we need to consult and see all the role players that are needed to strengthen our initiatives in the department, particularly with the new strategic direction. Chairperson, we would like to ensure that the bulk of the presentation today focuses on the two presentations, so that we can allow the House, Chairperson and Honourable Members, to really engage and give us input before the documents are finalised. We have included as part of preparation the compliance monitoring. We have a compliance monitoring plan, and that becomes very important so that right from the beginning we know how we are going to monitor and how we are going to ensure that there is compliance, because we have found the root cause of some of the areas that were presented previously. And we have also looked at our challenges and categorized them into short term, those that can be addressed immediately, and those that can be addressed in the medium term, and that those can be addressed in the long term, so that at least we have a baseline from which we move. We will be introducing strict and systematic measures to hold managers accountable for failing to promote and monitor compliance, So that will be built in terms of performance agreements and work plans of all managers and the lower levels. We have resolved that we will have regular interaction with the National Treasury and the Auditor General to ensure that more managers are exposed and to ensure that more managers are exposed to the regulatory framework. And that was done also at the beginning of the strategic plan, taking all of us through the planning process of government so that we are all on the same page. In conclusion, Chairperson, we are striving to ensure that there is alignment in the budget and our strategic plan. And the operational plans, as Ms. Fina will be elaborating, will also be considered to ensure that we interrogate our budget as we are implementing our strategies. We also want to ensure the alignment in the strategic plan, in the E&E and the annual report. So in doing this, we are looking at an integrated approach and ensuring that all the aspects are covered. We have also resolved, Chairperson, that we would also have an integrated midterm review that is done together as a department so that we support each other, the region's national office and the different branches. We would like to take this opportunity, Chairperson and honorable members, to thank the Portfolio Committee for its leadership role and further pledge that we are indeed ready to and committed as a department to address the challenges and to work together to ensure that the department achieves and becomes indeed like our vision. It's one of the best in the world. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Then the following presentation will be done by Ms. Shaina on the strategic plan. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to Chairperson and honourable members and other members of the meeting. We have circulated a copy of the presentation. We have also circulated to the Portfolio Committee a copy of the draft strategic plan. So the Portfolio Committee members have been able, ahead of today's meeting, to get a sense of the detail that is in the strategic plan. In the presentation, we will not be talking to the detail, but obviously can look at that first. But I think that our aim is to be able to ensure that the Portfolio Committee has an understanding of the way in which we've gone about our strategic planning and how the strategic...
Well, that, I'm sorry to interrupt. You see, I have raised this issue of documents. Last week, I'm raising it again to say that this document, or the three documents, was issued to the Secretary on Friday. On Friday. You see, it's three thick documents. You see, if, and you will agree with me, Acting Commissioner, if we really want to do justice to the work of the Portfolio Committee, then I don't think it is proper for these members who are sitting here to be expected that they must now engage with these documents at least 7 days before. But you have indicated in the last meeting, Acting Commission, that you are sending this document in time, but it's stuck somewhere. We will address it. But it's very serious to me as the chairperson, because I don't think that these members as well can engage them into this. I just want to bring it under again, like last week, under your attention, and for the record.
Thank you, Chairperson. We will obviously ensure that we address the issue of ensuring that documentation is prepared 7 days ahead of the meeting. I think the critical challenge in terms of the strategic planning process is that it's a current and ongoing process, but we will ensure that we do address that next week. As I was indicating, the presentation is designed to give you an overall sense of the strategic plan for the year, focusing on the coming financial year, so that the relationship between the strategic plan and budget can then become apparent as the presentation goes on to deal with the budget aspect. So in terms of the presentation that we're going to give you, we'll touch on the background to the development of the strategic plan, although the Acting Commissioner has touched on elements of that in her opening comments. We'll reflect on some of the highlights from the current financial year 2006-07, before then dealing with the priorities of the coming year, the State of the Nation addressing the Government Programme of Action, and how we've addressed that in terms of integrating it into the strategic plan, and then give you an overview of the strategic plan and the programme performance for year one, ending with the challenges for implementation, and obviously the Portfolio Committee is well aware of the fact that there are major challenges that we have to address in terms of delivery. So starting with the process of the strategic plan development, the Executive Management Committee met in August of last year and did a very intensive evaluation of our strategic planning performance evaluation, the issues of the Auditor General Report, the internal compliance issues, as well as the implementation of the white paper we interrogated in a fair amount of depth. What came out of that was that we need to ensure that we take a longer term view of strategic planning, and that rather than trying to identify everything as priorities within 1 year, we need to be able to develop a phased approach to priorities and recognize that within our department there are many priorities that are not single year issues, they're actually issues that we're going to have to deal with over an extended period of time. What we had also identified was the need for us to be able to look in a different way at the role of operational management within the department. That in order to address the delivery challenges, we need to look at operational management, in other words, the regional management processes, in a slightly different way from the way in which we have been. Clearly, the period that we've been through has been one of developing a white paper, of developing the policy and the procedures that flow after that, and setting the strategic direction of the department. The critical challenge now is to ensure that cascades down to operational management. What we also identified in that process was that we needed to strategically focus on what are the enabling conditions that are necessary for delivery on the white paper. And we have indicated there that the one element is the creation of the institutional capacity for delivery. At correctional centre level, do we have the right capacity? Do we have the right the right number of staff? Do we have the right competencies of staff? Do we have the right resources available at correctional centre level? So that's the one aspect of ensuring that we create the institutional capacity for delivery on the white paper. And the other aspect is overcoming the obstacles that distract us or make rehabilitation a far more difficult objective to achieve. And there we would be identifying issues like security breaches, corruption within our correctional centres, overcrowding, vacancies rate within correctional centres at that level. Just as some of them, I think we would also be identifying the importance of information systems, the addressing the issue of scarce skills under that element of removing the obstacles that make delivery of rehabilitation more difficult. If we can move to the next slide. The process then of developing the five-year plan starts, as the Acting Commissioner was saying, from our mid-year strategic review, a process that we undertook in October, November of last year. A critical aspect of each branch, on the basis of input from regions as well as their own reporting system, to be able to evaluate halfway through the financial year, how far are we with our operational plans? Operational plans obviously being the one-year program of delivery. That then enables us to reprioritize for the rest of that financial year, but also to look at what elements are not going to be able to be completed within that financial year. So I'm trying to understand what the reasons are. It may be that the resources are not being put in place. It may be that a project is more complex as one unfolds, that there are objective factors that we take into account. That then enables each of the branches to come forward with the input for the strategic plan, which is both to review what was then the year two of the strategic plan that was tabled in Parliament last year, and to be able to fine-tune that process, but also then to add the outer year, the year five. So we revised the targets for year one of this year's strategic plan on the basis of that mid-year strategic review. And I think that Chris Darwin has indicated that we are going to be managing that mid-year review in a slightly more integrated manner in this coming financial year. So there really is a coming together of the departments between regions and head office branches to ensure that we are able to identify the challenges that are causing delivery difficulties. So that integrated planning approach flowed from that mid-year review into then an extended EMC Executive Management Committee work session in January, in which we interrogated strategic plan input from branches, but at the same time started on the process which had come out of the Treasury proposed amendments to Chapter 5 of the Treasury Guidelines that deals with the strategic planning process, in which now, having been approved, and we received this only yesterday, having been approved, we now need to ensure that there is a business plan, a one-year business plan that focuses on that first year of the strategic plan and unpacks that in more detail, and that we are now going to table not only the strategic plan opponent, but that business plan as well. The work on that business plan is we. Obviously doesn't like the idea of a business plan. The business plan obviously is a new process because it sits somewhere between the strategic plan and the operational planning processes. It is particularly useful in terms of being able to identify cross-cutting issues that require involvement of all of the branches. So that process is one that now has the mandate from the Treasury Guidelines and will certainly be carried forward. The work that was done in that Executive Management Committee session has also then had to be combined with the priorities that have come out of the Cabinet report. So fortunately, ours was scheduled immediately after that, so we were able to bring those issues together. The State of the Nation of priorities and the government program priorities, some of which are not new issues from this year, some of them have been priorities over the last couple of years. The issue of overcrowding remains a JCS cluster priority. The issue of getting children out of centres and into places, the safety has been a priority both of the social cluster and the JCS cluster for a number of years. The issue of enhancing rehabilitation has been a JCS cluster priority for a number of years. So those are ongoing priorities, and we've ensured that we have pulled all of those together and they are reflected in our strategic plan. I think it's quite useful for us just to talk about strategic themes of work within DCS, because in terms of our core business, we are obliged to be able to ensure that our correctional centres are running on a day-to-day basis, while at the same time we are implementing the white paper, which requires a shift in terms of the way that we function. So the core business areas of security, offender rehabilitation part, social reintegration, and the care and well-being of our offenders are obviously critical elements of day-to-day compliance that we need to ensure operational management is on top of. But that runs, in a sense, parallel to the policy development process and then the implementation process, which requires one to find the balance between the day-to-day delivery that is taking place and training people to be able to implement the new policy. And linked to that, obviously, is the integrated human resource strategy, which is aimed at improving our HR capacity, not simply in terms of getting the numbers of people that we need for delivery on the white paper, but also ensuring that we've got the necessary competencies and skills, but that we also look at the conditions of service within our department and ensure that we are able to deliver what is necessary for our members to be able to focus themselves on the challenging work of delivery of rehabilitation and security within our centres. The other area, obviously, and I think the Portfolio Committee is well aware of the challenges that the department has experienced in terms of the governance issues, the anti-corruption strategy of the department, which we've briefed you on over a number of years, the compliance issues that we've paid particular attention to in interaction with the Portfolio Committee over the last while. If one looks at 2006-07, just to look at some of the highlights that we have focused on in this year. The improvement in security has been a critical feature of our delivery in this last year. The implementation and rollout of biometric systems within particular of our correctional centres, and obviously the further rollout of that is an element of our strategic plan. The implementation of the minimum security standards and the policies that we're reviewing that and being able to ensure that we've got the necessary procedures in place in relation to this. The relaunch of the HIV syphilis prevalence survey and the finalization of that report should be being made available in the very near future in relation to that. A critically important aspect, both in relation to offenders and in relation to members, to be able to give us a baseline of information against which we will be able to ensure that our strategies in this regard do in fact have the positive impact, both in relation to management of HIV and AIDS amongst offenders and in terms of the human resource element as well. The filling of posts at senior management level, there's been significant progress over the last year, obviously a process which is not yet complete. The accreditation of sites for the provision of ARVs has been part of the process of 2006-07, with particular sites being accredited in, I think, now three of the regions. Obviously, again, a process that is not a completed process, one that needs to be continued to roll out. The seven-day establishment and accelerated recruitment, the portfolio committee will be aware of the fact that this is not a one-year program. It's been a program that we have mapped out over 3 years and is due to be finished in March of 2000, at the end of the financial year 2008, with the rollout of the full seven-day establishment. But the recruitment processes to be able to deal with that are now in its final phases. That final contingent is going to the colleges as we speak. And then obviously after that we deal with the normal attrition of people leaving the department and coming back into the department. In 2006-07 we also launched the Corrections Week, an annual event aimed to be able to profile corrections as a profession and be able to ensure that we build on the kind of partnership that we need to deliver on the white paper. The important element of it being corrections is a societal responsibility, and we need to ensure that those partnerships are built and that the understanding of corrections responsibilities becomes a far broader process. The other event during 2006-07 obviously was the release of the Joint Commission report, the processing of that report and the implementation of the disciplinary hearings, the disciplinary processes that have come from that, as well as ensuring that the other elements of the recommendations have been adequately integrated with our strategic planning processes. The President and Deputy President have tasked the clusters to be able to identify key projects in each of the departments. These are not single-year projects, they are projects over a two-year process. They mesh very directly with issues that are raised in the State and Nation Address, existing priorities within the clusters, as well as key issues that we have identified in our strategic planning process. So the five key projects that we will be putting specific emphasis on delivery on over these next 2 years would be the issue of expediting the procurement of new correctional centres, but at the same time also ensuring that we make the necessary improvements to existing infrastructure so that it promotes security, promotes rehabilitation, and is appropriate for correction. So the alignment of our existing infrastructure with the demands of the White Paper is also a critical aspect of that project. And you'll find that those elements are reflected in the G program of our strategic plan, where we unpack both the planning processes as well as some of the delivery on those aspects. Can we just go back to that slide? The second one is the phased implementation of the offender rehabilitation fund. And I think the critical aspect there is that it is very closely linked to the building of the institutional capacity of the department to deliver on that. So our approach is that we are not going to be able to say, as from date X, the offender rehabilitation will be rolled out within 10 months. We will need to be able to ensure that it is rolled out, for example, in all of our centers of excellence, and that where we have the capacity in place already can be rolled out. But it needs to go hand in hand with the development of the institutional capacity, and in particular, linked to the last project that I'll speak about briefly, the job refinement and enhancement project. The portfolio committee will be aware of the fact that in this financial year we have also done a major reconceptualizing of social reintegration to look at our responsibilities in terms of probationers and parole processes and to ensure that those are effectively aligned with the white paper. And there again, the action plan that has been developed from that will be a phased implementation process. Again, the critical element being to ensure that we enhance the confidence in community corrections amongst the judiciary, so that it's better used as a direct, not custodial sentence, but at the same time that our parole processes are well managed and are able to break the cycle, continue to break the, or enhance breaking of the cycle of crime. The Maintenance Awaiting Trial Detention Project is a priority that started. It has its roots in the work that we've been doing over the years around overcrowding, but it has, in this form of a particular project, been a priority since last year, endorsed by the Cabinet Reporter in January of last year. It was identified as, at minimum, a three-year project, but we hope within these 2 years to make very significant progress in relation to delivering a remand detention system that is appropriate to both the constitutional obligations, the international instruments that define remand detention, as well as enhancing the effectiveness of the criminal justice system. The Job Refinement and Enhancement Project is aiming to ensure that the cascading down into practice of the White Paper, and in particular the detail now of the policies and procedures, meshes with the job functions and the job competencies of the people on the ground. So there is currently a pilot, a research project that is being done that is going to be piloted in Centres of Excellence that will enable us to really be able to identify exactly what the functions and the resources and the competencies are that are required at correctional centre level in order to be able to deliver on the priorities. The priorities that we've identified for this year, I think what is critically important here is that we've tried to avoid a shopping list in which we put the entire strategic plan as a priority. Now, obviously, if you're at correctional centre level, there's not much in the strategic plan that isn't a priority because you're faced with the challenges of delivery on the White Paper. But we focus, I think, moving directly from the two elements of ensuring that we create the environment, the institutional capacity to deliver on the White Paper, and that we remove the blockages in terms of delivery on rehabilitation, and that has guided what we've identified as our six priority areas for this year. The first is the creation of an enabling environment for rehabilitation. I think what is most important here is that this is not a priority that lies in one budget program. It's a priority that cuts across all of the budget programs. A vast amount of the central services work, for example, around the information system, the multi-information system, feeds into this priority. The human resource recruitment process, as well as the training processes, feeds into this process. The security and technology strategy of the department would feed into this process. Equally, the training in terms of the policy that has been developed within corrections, personal corrections around corrections programs, and the development and care around the offender rehabilitation process between the two branches would be a critical element of that. The phased delivery on social reintegration is also part of that process. The improvement of compliance with internal control and policies is obviously, I mean, I don't think that we need to indicate why we put that as a priority. It has been an element of our strategic planning over the last couple of years, but I think that with the compliance improvement plan and the mechanisms that we've developed to monitor delivery on that, we're now in a far better position to be able to identify the challenges and ensure that we really do make significant gains in that regard. The improvement planning implementation reporting framework, a critical aspect that our acting commissioner has already spoken to in the opening remarks. We've made significant progress, I think, in the way that we've managed this strategic planning process at the end of this financial year. But the critical aspect, obviously, is to ensure that through the reporting mechanism, we're able on a quarterly basis to look at what the challenges are that are being faced at delivery level and unblock those and be able to be informed in terms of our planning from that. And I think that what we should be anticipating from that is a significant improvement in relation to the targets that we've defined and our ability to deliver on that. The improved communication of the DCS strategic direction is an ongoing priority. Our particular emphasis for this strategic planning process is on both internal communication to ensure that from the commissioner's level down to the newest recruit at correctional centre level, there's a common understanding of where the department is trying to get to. And obviously the challenge is very enormously difficult. We are at 59,000 people at the moment. We've got 241 institutions, 9 regional, 6 regional offices, different management areas. The challenges of internal communication are critically important. But fundamentally, if we are going to be able to rehabilitate, that communication is important. But the second element of the improved communication is the community development, the development communication element, to try and ensure through programs, for example, like Operation Masibambisane, that we are able to reach out to the community, reach out to local government to ensure that there's a far better understanding of what our functions are and the partnership that we need with communities at that level. The implementation of the integrated human resources strategy, a critical element of building the institutional capacity of the department, ensuring that our recruitment processes, our training processes, that we move to a point in which corrections is a profession and we have the necessary refresher training involved in it. The final priority, obviously, is improving our partnerships and external relations, be they at local community level, be they interdepartmental cluster work, or be they in the international arena, with our particular focus in the international arena being on Africa. If I move to the next slide, the State of the Nation address, I think the overall focus for us was particularly important because it relates to issues of crime, poverty alleviation, social development, critical elements both of our function in terms of breaking the cycle of crime, but at the same time, critical elements in terms of crime prevention. The departmental specific ones that are reflected in the State of the Nation address is one, ensuring the effective institutional structures and systems for delivery on the white paper, and I think that our priorities on the previous slide indicate the way in which we have picked up on that. The management of the awaiting trial detainees project and ongoing cabinet-approved priorities. The improvement of the capacity of JCS and JCS departments and ensuring that there's an alignment, that we don't resource, for example, police at the expense of other departments, but we ensure that those capacities go through. Capacities not only in terms of numbers, but also ensuring that as policy and procedures change in different departments, that understanding cascades through to all of the criminal justice sector staff. And then the final one, obviously, is the building of the new correctional centres, an element of the State and Nation Address and part of our strategic plan. We can move to the next slide. As I've indicated, we've included the priorities in all programs. They are cross-cutting issues. They are not specific to particular to particular branches. What we have also ensured, and I'm not going to read through the entire list of this on the slide, but the critical aspect is that we had identified key projects that had developed during the last year that we wanted to ensure were adequately reflected in the strategic plan. So, for example, work that we've been doing under the ambit of the Harnessing Organisation of Culture project over the last year is now solidly reflected in our strategic plan. The mentioning of awaiting child detention, not clearly visible in last year's strategic plan, is visible. The implementation of centres of excellence is visible both as a particular project and in terms of targets for the year. We can move to the next slide. The next couple of slides just go through the administration, the budget programs, and just highlight some of the key elements of them. And I haven't been monitoring the time, Chairperson, but with your permission, I'll go quite fast through the slides. Obviously, the portfolio committee can then engage with detail if they so wish. The administration program, the compliance improvement plan, the involvement of managers, particular emphasis being put on our role as managers at both senior, middle, and junior level to ensure that we turn around the compliance process. Improved communication support relations with Chapter 9 institutions and other statutory bodies, ensuring that the inputs we receive from those institutions become something that we deliver on at operational level. And then the compliance of the TFMA and internal financial management controls. The recommendations of the Joint Commission obviously are also not something that could be dealt with completely within one financial year. I think the anticipated end of that was somewhere in November of the coming year that the disciplinary processes would be anticipated to be finalised. The implementation, the shift from developing policies and procedures to implementing of them is a critical element that we brought on board in relation to that. So I further our indicators are now more delivery on those than on the development of the policy. The implementation performance reporting on centers of excellence is critically important because it's that that is ultimately going to enable us to look at the institutional capacity that the department really does need for delivery on the white paper. And then the Master of Information Systems Plan, an 8-year plan. So it's not a short-term issue. The development of those systems is complex, but that is also included in the administration program. To continue with it, the aligning of the elements of government planning cycle, a critical aspect to be spoken on, some depth, and development of effective monitoring and evaluation systems, so we are able, on a quarterly basis, to look at our organizational performance and be able to equip the minister, the deputy minister, the commissioner, executive management to make strategic interventions on the basis of that performance monitoring system. The development of the service delivery improvement plan as public service regulation obligation is also part of our strategic plan. The implementation of what was developed in this financial year was integrated human resources strategy. Improving the functioning of the cluster system, particularly at regional and local level, is an important aspect of our work. And finally, the continued participation in the establishment of a continental correction body, but then also concluding bilateral agreements with African countries. Moving then to the security program, the improvement of measures to ensure safety and security of the three elements, the inmates on the one hand, the officials on the second hand, the service providers who work within our facilities, and ultimately the public, is a critical part of the program. That includes the vetting of officials, a process which we have through cabinet approval of a new vetting framework in December, now being able to move ahead with the cooperation of NEO in relation to that. Refresher training for our emergency support teams and the review of their roles in the department. Specialized training for security personnel, recognizing that there is specialized training that is required in our environment. Our indicators in relation to escapes and assaults is a reduction by 10% from the previous financial year, and I think that in relation to that we have seen consistently a reduction of that over the last 10 years or so. Obviously something we need to do further. Reduction of unnatural deaths by 5% in comparison to last year. Completion of installation of security equipment at 25% of the correctional centres, a rollout of the process that we had embarked on this year. Moving then to the corrections programme, we have ensured that the reduction at the JCS priority in relation to reduction of overcrowding in relation to sentenced offenders is part of our strategic plan. But what is most importantly is that we try also to ensure that the overcrowding of sentenced offenders is spread evenly. We currently have quite diverse levels of overcrowding in our facilities. The phased implementation of the offender rehabilitation path, the rehabilitation path has been completed, the training of people in relation to that has taken place. Obviously the critical element of delivery on that is the capacity at correctional centre levels to be able to deliver on that, and in particular the challenges that we experience in relation to care skills and the role that, for example, the psychologist would play in elements of the offender rehabilitation path. The development of prioritized offence-related corrections programs, a continuation of what we have started. We have developed four of them. Obviously, there is an ongoing process of developing those because they are offence-related. It's not a generic process. It's needs-based and it's offence-related. And that process and being able to draw on international best practice in relation to that is important. The increase of participation of offenders in rehabilitation programs is one of the indicators that we are setting, and obviously rehabilitation programs then need to be disaggregated into corrections programs, development programs, and the indicators are there in relation to that. The facilitation of removal of both the waiting trials and sentenced children from correctional centres. Now, obviously, in terms of sentenced children, it depends on the nature of the offence that the child has been sentenced for. But that is an interdepartmental process that we need to ensure continues in terms of it's critically dependent on social judgment being able to ensure that there are facilities, but it's also critically important on restorative justice processes and the diversion of children from the criminal justice system being in place to provide alternatives to incarceration where appropriate. And the last aspect of the corrections program is the improved effective management of remand detention, both in terms of internal processes and in terms of JCS processes. That needs to deal with the immediate day-to-day management now, as well as in looking at the improvement of the system of remand detention. The CARE program, the critical element of it is implementation of a comprehensive health care service. The current review and development of new care programs for implementation, an ongoing process of being able to look at what we are doing in practice, being able to review it and ensure that we are able to then put in place the capacity to be able to develop it. While we have completed the process of the prevalence survey, the one element that we were not able to do in that prevalence survey was to do an assessment of the knowledge, attitude, perception, behavior in relation to HIV and AIDS. But I think that it's been a critical aspect that we've been aware of and have intended to look at to be able to address the particular information around HIV and AIDS amongst both offenders and members, and in particular the attitude, perception, and then cascading through to behavior. The development and implementation of a needs-based rehabilitation approach for special categories, chapter 11 of the White Paper, if my memory is correct, identifies that we should not deal with offenders as a whole, as a single category, but we need to look at the specific categories. We have young offenders, we have women, we have offenders with disabilities, we have elderly offenders, we have offenders who are foreign nationals. They need to be able to have specific development and care programs to address them and their specific needs. Within development, the challenge is the implementation of a comprehensive education, sports, recreation, arts, culture, skills development program, cascading what has been developed into practice. And obviously there with critical relationships with the Department of Education, Department of Labor, Department of Arts and Culture being critical elements there. What we need to be able to focus on, and this is the critical element of the strategic plan, is to implement a comprehensive offender skills development plan that will be able to enhance skills utilization and employability of offenders. The critical challenge of being able to socially reintegrate people back into society is to ensure that they have skills that will enable them to be employable once they are reintegrated back into society. And linked to that then obviously is our maintaining and expanding both our agriculture and our production workshop system, both in terms of its role in skills utilization and employability, but also in terms of poverty alleviation. To move then to social reintegration, we have developed in this financial year the framework on social reintegration. Our challenge now is to cascade that into practice, to develop and implement policy procedures for how restorative justice unfolds within our particular department, obviously in line with the responsibilities of other departments in relation to restorative justice. Part of the work of corrections branch has been to develop a classification tool for offenders within our facilities and to also have a classification tool in relation to remand detainees within our system. The responsibility then under the social reintegration program is to develop that classification tool and, flowing from that, then a reclassification tool for both probationers and parolees. So we have a classification tool that is appropriate to the objectives of not only monitoring probationers and parolees, but ensuring their ongoing rehabilitation. The fourth element of this program is to really promote the alternative non-custodial sentence to the judiciary, and in relation to that there's a program of interaction with the judiciary around community corrections and our responsibilities there. Part of that then is to ensure that we improve the functioning of the correctional supervision and parole systems, both in terms of the functioning of our community corrections officers, but also in relation to our community corrections supervision and parole board. Enhancing operational muscle on the signing that outreach that I was speaking about to community and local government is a critical element that is necessary for success in terms of social reintegration. Our last program then is our facilities. The critical elements here that are reflected in our plan is the construction of Kimberley, the completion of a viability study, I apologize that the word got left out, for Leocorp, the implementation of the feasibility study findings for the new head office, The development of a monitoring framework for the capital works budget and expenditure. The five-year facility plan, which includes the new centres, including the centres other than Kimberley, which are based on, which are dependent on the feasibility study that is in the process of being completed, as well as the upgrading of our facilities to enable delivery on the one paper, as well as the ongoing challenge of ensuring that our facilities are appropriately renovated. The final element of the facilities program that is reflected in our strategic plan is the rental accommodation for both community corrections officers, including re-looking at where those community corrections are situated, the provision of regional office and head office rented accommodation. Moving then to the challenges that we are very aware of and that we are addressing in terms of the development of the business plan. There are three critical elements of delivery on the white paper that are particularly intermeshed. The provision of a three-year system, the implementation of unit management and the structured day program cannot be disaggregated. They require each other to be able to go forward. But most importantly, they are dependent on the completion of the seven-day establishment and the job refinement process. So if you've got the necessary numbers of staff in place in the right shift system, but most importantly, the functions are very well defined and hence the competencies and training that flow out of it are very clearly defined. So that second challenge of delivery on the job refinement and enhancement project is a critical challenge for this particular coming financial year. The increased participation of offenders in programs, the challenges there obviously are in relation to the state fuel that we have spoken about at length, but also in relation to ensuring that the other issues of overcrowding and security breaches are agreed so that our focus can actually be on ensuring participation of offenders within the program. The issue of access obviously is an ongoing challenge, a challenge that changes its nature from time period to time period. I think that our concern is around those two particular issues of collusion by our members in escape and the element of violence that is prevalent in some of the escapes that have taken place. The attracting and retaining of clear skills, a process which corporate services has made significant progress on in terms of developing the framework for us being able to deal with it. Our challenge obviously is that some of the elements of scarce skills are not something that is specific to our department but that are in fact national phenomena. South Africa as a nation doesn't have enough psychologists. How then does one attract psychologists to come into our department? And I think it's an issue that has received some attention over the last couple of days in relation to police. So it's not a specific problem for our own department, but something that impacts on the criminal justice system as a whole. The finalization and implementation of policy and procedures is a critical challenge. Obviously, there are elements of policy development that do not stop because another department may develop a policy that has impact on us, and we therefore need to either review a policy, amend a policy, or develop a new policy. But we are very aware of the fact that the policy and procedure development processes need to reach a conclusion in the sense of the white paper needs to be cascaded in, and we need to be able to say we've not done that. The process then is the refinement or where there are new issues that have emerged. The improved delivery at management area level, taking into account local government role, that broadening of partnerships at that level is a challenge that we have not adequately been able to address, and I think Operation Masibambisane is designed to be able to address it. The alignment of the planning, budgeting, and reporting framework, an issue that we are very aware of, making significant progress on, but have still got to maintain that vigilance to ensure that that challenge is addressed. In conclusion, then, Chairperson, we built on the Executive Management Committee evaluation in August of last year, that we need to be more strategically focused on creating an enabling environment for delivery on the white paper, both in the sense of creating the institutional capacity for delivery and overcoming the obstacles to rehabilitation such as overcrowding, which will then, as we move through the 5 years of the strategic plan, enable us to be able to focus far more directly on the actual delivery of our core business of rehabilitation and social reintegration. We have ensured that all of our key projects are reflected in the strategic plan. Something that we were very conscious of last year, that there were key strategic projects that one would not be able to pinpoint directly in the strategic plan. We have ensured that there's an alignment between the E&E and the strategic plan, an issue that the portfolio committee had been concerned about in previous years. And we have, out of that alignment process, also then reviewed our own internal processes to ensure that we were able to sequence processes better to ensure that that alignment was not something that we have to drive, that is something that flows out of the way in which we manage those processes. The five major projects that we've identified over a two-year project mesh very closely with the six priority areas that we've identified for the 2007-08 financial years. I don't think that there's a disjuncture there, but it does enable us to be very focused in terms of those particular areas. The key focus, obviously, is to address the challenges that face our department, both in terms of compliance issues, compliance in the broader sense of the governance of the department, as well as compliance in terms of the core business delivery of the department, as well as ensuring that we have the institutional capacity to be able to deliver on the white paper and the mandate of rehabilitation and social reintegration. Just perhaps as a final comment to go back to what the process that we have been following. We have the draft strategic plan that we have circulated to you. We are hoping that after today's deliberations, the deliberations on the 20th, we will be able to refine that document on the basis of the input of the portfolio committee and the organisations that present in the public hearing. That then obviously gets approved by the minister, tabled in Parliament, ahead of the budget vote. What we will be doing, obviously, flowing from the Treasury Guidelines Amendment, is ensuring that that process then also brings on board the business plan that will give the cross-cutting nature of the activities that are required for delivery on the strategic plan. And I think that process is going to enable us far better to meet the indicators and targets that we set in the strategic plan. We are currently involved in the operational planning processes. Two of the regions have met for operational planning. One of the branches has met for operational planning. The rest are cascading through over the next couple of weeks. With that then goes the budget allocation process and the aligning of the costing of those operational plans and then the management of finances as we go through the year. Chairperson, I hope that that's given a sense of the strategic plan, the process that we followed, as well as an element of the context.
Deputy Commissioner, thank you very much for this briefing. But I see that hands are going up and down. Me Winnie Ngwenya's hand is going up, Me Nawa's hand, and I'm trying to suppress them all the time, Mr. Self. But I'm going to give you now chance to interact with this document so that we must ask these questions. I'm also having questions to ask on this document. May Winnie first, and then May Nawa, and then Mr. Self, and then Ntate Maoke.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also, thank you for the presentation. Chairperson, my question is based on the page 5. Bullet 5 on the building of the correctional centers. Chairperson, on the second report of the Standing Committee of the Public Account, ISCOPA, AG, and the Treasurer identified problems that have been reported for for four consecutive years and have noted areas in DCS spending during the 2005-2006 financial year. Now, I want to know, Chairperson, that this strategic plan is going to address the problem of the contractors that are building this new building in terms of the 24 years contract, and also and on that report, it was clear that the people that have been getting that contract have been resigned already, and those people that are on the business plan, it shows that they are the owners of the contract. I want to know that is this a strategic plan going to solve that problem, that the mistakes that have been happened, it won't happen again? I thank you.
Thank you very much,
thank you, Sir Person. I'm going to say it again, like you said, that we are really, really disadvantaged. We don't know how to interact with this because we have just received the documents today. It's so very much unfortunate that we are being disadvantaged, really, really. It's hurting. My question is, on your first slide, you also asked this question, that do we really have the right number of staff? I'm going to underline the right number. Right as in vetting. Is the department in completion of vetting the officials, or they are still in phase waiting to vet those officials? And the number, is department satisfied with the number of staff that is in DCS, or is there still a shortage of staff? And my second question is on development, page 8. In development, it says that the implement comprehensive education, sports, recreation, agriculture, and skills development programs. My question is, yes, offenders are to be developed, but how is it this possible if we are still running short of artisan? How do you emphasize the retention of this artisan in order to develop the image? And in 2004-2005, there was this program of Reducate, but now it's department is simply silent about it. It was a good program. I don't know whether it's still continuing or what. And when we were visiting Johannesburg prison, there was this problem of the building, which was about to collapse. There is this cracking of the foundation. And we are seeing that department is not in the youth and near future to build another prison. We are only told about one. What is going to happen to that prison in Johannesburg if it can just collapse? What is really going to happen? This feasibility study that we are told, the completion of the feasibility study, what are the time frames for feasibility study in order to for us to see many, more than 5 prisons being built within 3 years' time? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed, sir. I'd like to thank Jim Schreiner for the presentation. And if I sound a little negative, it's because of a sort of profound sense of frustration. Because, I mean, I think we all absolutely support what the department is trying to do in developing an offender rehabilitation plan and implementing that, because that is the only way that we are going to be able to effectively rehabilitate offenders as part of their service in correctional centers. And, you know, we also understand, I think all of us, the challenges of capacity and overcrowding and everything that goes with that. But, you know, the answer to overcrowding, in a sense, lay in the construction of new generation prisons. And yet, the new generation prisons that were promised for, you know, some time ago, are not being built for a variety of reasons which we all understand and which we've been briefed about. The offender rehabilitation plan will depend on people who are inmates having a productive day, having education, having counselling. The actual strategic plan suggests the rollout of the offender rehabilitation plan will start this year in a mere 6 centres of excellence, and that is a very modest total, I would suggest. It suggests that, for example, education should be rolled out to 22,000 offenders in formal education programs, which I, you know, is a goal which I would doubt we will achieve, because when we went to King Williamstown, if you recollect, and saw people being educated in passageways and in tiny rooms that have been made available for the purpose, I'm not sure whether that sort of goal is realizable. It says that it relies on psychological counseling, and the goal there is psychological sessions, 15,500 sessions for an inmate population of over 150,000. Well, you know, I struggle to see whether we're going to be able to do that. It talks about agricultural production in increasing. But in both Polesmore and St. Albans, when we went there, we were told about that agricultural production is actually declining, and it comes down to the lack of staff and the lack of trained people that are able to be there. Likewise, at Malmesbury, where there are 5 workshops, 4 of the workshops don't operate because the people who are supposed to be doing the training and development aren't there because of service conditions. So, you know, my sense, my disquiet about this is that I think that the strategic plan is great as far as it goes. And I liked the strategic plan last year, and I liked the strategic plan the year before. But I'm not always confident that we see that what is contained in the strategic plan actually translates into reality, and that one is able to then say, well, that has been achieved, and we're now going on to year 2, and you know, on to year 3, and that one has a sense that it's actually a continuous process. I get the sense sometimes that because of problems and so on, the goals that are set in the strategic plan change. And I'd like the department's comment on that perception. Thank you, Chair.
So my order then was up, but before that, let's give the department a chance to respond. I think Babafisa then is all for us, and in what is called. But before the department responds, you mentioned in 2 slides the implementation of the Charlie Commission report. Now. Can you tell us how many of the people mentioned in the Charlie Commission's report are either charged internally or criminally? How many of these people? Because in 2 slides, you see, in one of the slides, I think it's like I'll tell you now. I'll tell you commission. On page 6, implementation of Jali Commission recommendation, that administration. Maybe if you can tell us, because it's very much important to know that. And then the next step will come, and then Bishop Dolo.
I think the way we'll approach the responses, the different responsibilities will be taken by the different people. But if I can start with the development of offenders, which also is much related to the offender rehabilitation part. It is true that the targets that are there seem minimal in relation to the total population. But what we have done, unlike the previous year, was to put a ratio to say how many psychologists can see how many offenders and be realistic and use the psychologists that we have so that if we come and report in future, we are able to say when we set this target, we had, let's say, 55 psychologists. However, in the course of the year, so many resigned or we had more. Therefore, our figures are more. But corporate services has been hard at work on the retention strategy, including artisans, because it's true that there are workshops that are there, the building is there, but because the artisans are not there, then you find that you cannot train as many offenders as you do. But what we have also done, Chairperson, is true that the offender rehabilitation part, we are looking at centers of excellence, which of course, when you think that we have 242 correctional facilities, why only take this? I think we need to remember that when we came to present on the offender rehabilitation part, we said the implementation of the white paper, we take centers of excellence so that we can then start implementing the white paper in those centers to have best practice so that we can go back later and say this particular center is where we are implementing and becomes a blueprint. Chairperson, it's true that it's quite a challenge because we can't say we have enough human resources. The agriculture state going down was also affected by the implementation of the 7-day establishment. It's a good project because it's increasing staff, but when it's phased in, it also has its shortcomings in that then you have to, because you are no longer paying for the 1 day, people have to take a day off. Then you would find that there are people taking a day off on Monday. On that day, then the offenders cannot go out. So we are balancing, but we're hoping that when we complete the phasing in of 7 days, and then the unit management, because the advantage of a structured day, it works like in a school, it has been used in a structured day. You use the resources that are limited optimally. For instance, if you have a structured day, you can have the offenders participating for most of the day, but you rotate them. Those who have their education in the morning then have sports the next time, then go to counseling and so on. So they fill the day so that the same resources are used optimally by the people who are around. Our idea is that the offender rehabilitation part actually is the idea, but we cannot just do the new offenders only. We are taking the centers of excellence because we also have to do the backlog. Remember, it's about assessing and profiling the offenders and ensuring that there is a sentence plan for all of them. So those are some of the reasons. The number of people were asked about education. In education, we calculated the educators that we have. We do have some educators that are in the department. We also have those that are outside, not many, that are assisting us. So we calculate the actual number we have and then the students that are involved. But Chairperson, finally on this one, we have been going out a lot for partnerships. For instance, the Honourable Member mentioned Reducate. It's still a program that is there. And a lot of offenders have been trained and are training others. It's not in all sectors that we admit, because when we get an NGO or a CBO that does a program, they are not in all the regions, but Reducate is still there in our centers. But it's unfortunate that it's not spreading in all the regions, because also the facilitators are limited in their numbers of providing. But they try to transfer the skill to offenders and to our members. So we hope the partnerships, like in the Department of Labor, assist us by providing the money and the people who can come and provide skills. But again, we don't reach all the numbers, but we hope that with the introduction of unit management and a structure day, you could have more offenders participating in future rather than the numbers that are participating now. And some of the issues that were said, that there are offenders who are educated in a passage. I think it's our own officials becoming creative. The idea is that we should have schools, classrooms, therapy rooms and so on, but it's not all the centers where we have that. So they are creative, others were under a tree and so on. It's not an ideal situation, but they try to reach the needs of those offenders that need the education and that has been addressed. Chairperson, I will allow the other colleagues also to answer some of the questions.
Yes, well, thank you. The issue that was raised specifically in terms of the maintenance of our facilities. Jefferson, that is one of the areas that we've identified in terms of our risk management exercise as well, that we do have a problem in terms of the maintenance of the facilities, to such an extent that where a facility is handed over to the RAM project, we're not actually allowed to continue day-to-day maintenance. We actually cause that facility to actually deteriorate also rapidly. To such extent that we then had an agreement with the Auditor General's office to assist us do a performance audit, specifically in terms of RAM. With that report, they would be able then actually to design a policy and guidelines and to deal with RAM specifically. And then also the issue is that we will then have a base to negotiate with Public Works that we can actually take over that responsibility as well. Included in that is also the issue in terms of own resources. Because in terms of RAM, we're not allowed to use own resources. And that goes hand in hand with the development, also the employment of offenders. So it's a broader concept only in terms of that maintenance. So we're well aware of that situation, and we're situated in that way. To have a joint venture between us, Public Works, as well as the own force to deal with operating specifically. In terms of the feasibility study, Chairperson, yes. Feasibility study is due the end of this month, as we have indicated, and we can confirm that we contact the transaction advisor, they confirm that we will have at the end of this month. Depending on the outcome of the feasibility study, they will give the indication of the procurement options for the new facility. Then between us, Public Works, as well as the PVP unit of the National Treasury, as well as the Budget Office of National Treasury, will be then in a position to make an informed decision which route actually to follow. So it's difficult to indicate now in terms of what's going to be the progress in terms of how many we will actually do both, how soon we'll be able to do that. But we cannot actually pre-end the outcome of the feasibility study. Once we have that, we will then be able to do that. And Chairperson, we already have made a commitment to yourself that we will actually keep the portfolio committee informed of that development. So we just want to reiterate specifically that commitment.
The question was a time frame. Is it correct?
Yes.
She was asking a time frame. You see, we can't, I understand why Menawa is asking this question. We can't have an open thing. You see, these prisons are coming now for a very long time. And I know why she's asking. You know, we as a portfolio committee must be sure that no, this time frame, we are going to have it, that time. If you are not reaching that time frame, we'll come back and report. But we can't leave it open forever.
Captain, yes, the time frame will only be possible once we receive the feasibility report. We can't actually make that commitment at this point of time, because the report will actually give an indication of which is the best procurement option for us. Should we actually go the conventional route, should we go the PPP route, or should we actually have a combination of the two? And that will also give us indication how we fit. So we can also look in terms of what the possibility in terms of some of the places, like for instance, we look at the issue in terms of NIDA, for instance. Some of the earthwork is already completed. So it can be addressed differently from other places. So as soon as we have that report, we will be able to have a proper time frame in terms of how we will be able to build those facilities. But it's not possible for us actually to pre-empt that specifically.
I don't want to
echo
one. The thing is going on and on and on. You know, now we are asking at least a time frame now. You know how long is this thing going on. And even up till today, you can't tell the portfolio committee that no, we are going to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 with the disability study. I mean, that manpower is there. The ground, you know, Leukop. We were there in Leukop. Everything is there. It is there. What is it, Nigel? And what is it, the other? Plexo. I don't know the other side. But I mean, it is there. And the government is spending money on maintaining this site. It is not true. That is why the member is asking that question. Give us at least a time frame. If you are not going to reach that time, then we will review and you will come back and tell us about it.
Kevin, the situation is that we cannot actually give you a specific time of when the facilities will be booked. I cannot do that. It's impossible to do this. What we can actually give you the commitment is that we receive that report and we do have the commitment that actually that between the departments, we will actually take the decision as soon as possible. Actually, then after which procurement option we will actually will be following, and also to keep the portfolio committee informed of which of these alternatives we will actually do. We also have a commitment from National Treasury in terms of the funding that's been suspended for the time being until we have that report. Yes, we are well aware of that, but we can give you the commitment that it will be as soon as possible, Chairperson, because we are well aware of the situation and we cannot delay the process any longer. We are well aware of that as well.
Yes,
my question is, are these feasibility studies for all the 8 prisons that were supposed to be built? Thank you.
Kevin is correct. We actually, the feasibility study is not only for the 4 that we mentioned, but also the next 4 that we've identified. It's in all inclusive. Yes, 7 of them, all inclusive. Yes, Kevin.
You can't tell us now when the feasibility study. We are not talking about building the structure. The feasibility study. We are not talking about the building. That you must understand. Tell us when the feasibility study will be released.
That's all. Gibson has indicated that the transactor advisor confirmed that we will have the feasibility study at the end of this month.
Gibson, we agree, that's good. I think it's going to be a process that will really enable us to move forward and be able to put in very clear timeframes to that element of our facilities program in our strategic plan. There were two issues that I just wanted to pick up on apart from that particular issue. The one is the issue of the vetting. And I think there are two elements to it. One, whether we had the right numbers of staff, and secondly, whether we had the right types of staff and whether we've done the appropriate vetting. I think we have indicated that we have completed our last major intake to get our numbers up. Obviously, we have particular categories of staff that are still need to be fulfilled, but the scarce skills remains a critical element. There are middle and junior management vacancies that we need to fill, but the kind of entry-level recruitment that we needed is there. But I think the critical aspect is that the integrated human resource strategy has now enabled us to have a very systematic plan, which perhaps Mr. Sistani would like to elaborate on a little bit further. But that element of ensuring that we are getting to the right numbers is there. The right competencies is obviously going to be our challenge. In relation to the vetting of officials, there's been policy processes taking place within the near environment that have obviously had an impact on our ability to do the vetting. I think the portfolio committee has already been briefed when we presented our annual report last year that there are capacity challenges from near side. The approach that they've adopted is to develop vetting field work units within particular departments, and from the cabinet process, our department has been approved as one of those. So we're in the process currently of rolling out the necessary policy and procedure and systems between the two departments to be able to deal with that. We're faced with a situation which we've got to vet people when they come into the department, but we've also got to re-vet when people's security clearances come up for re-vetting, but we also have to deal with the backlog of people who come into the department without the necessary vetting. So the approach that we have adopted as a department is that once we've resolved those issues with NIA, we need to develop a five-year vetting plan that enables us to then deal with the identify which are the strategic posts in the department that need to be vetted and what level do they need to be vetted to. Parallel to that, we've obviously got to train and develop the capacity within our vetting field work unit to be able to do that. So the vetting of officials is not going to be a quick, in this financial year we deal with all 39,000 members. We're going to need to deal with this strategically. Obviously, as we are recruiting people into the department currently, the vetting processes are kicking in. We are ensuring that before senior managers are appointed, the security clearance processes are completed. So I think the other element that has come out of the new process is what processes need to be greater clarity on what processes do departments need to do themselves, what processes get done within the near environment, which also then means that the real vetting capacity within NIA and within the fieldwork unit is supported by our own HR capacity. That is going to enable us to move far faster on the vetting process. But certainly the issue of the completion of vetting of officials is a five-year process, if not a longer process. But I think that we have, in this financial year, made very significant gains, both in terms of the broader government framework around vetting, as well as developing our own capacity. On the issue of the Jolly Commission, I don't actually have in my head or at my fingertips the details of exactly where we are with all of the 106 investigations that are recommended in the Jolly Commission. So what I would like to do, Chairperson, if it's okay with you, is to commit us to providing you with the latest breakdown of that. What I can say, though, is that the internal processes in relation to all of those people who were named in that report have been undertaken, and that where criminal charges have been recommended, those have been referred to SAS. But the exact status of where those investigations are, which disciplinary hearings may have been completed, which are ongoing, I would like to be able to provide you that detail, if that's an okay response to that question.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me quickly just respond to some of the issues that were raised. One of the issues was the staff number. From corporate services side, I would indicate that the vacancy level in the department is not as bad as it seems. Across the board in the public service, the vacancy rate is about 35%. And the average vacancy rate in correctional services is 7%. And we've got challenges at production level is at 6%. But where we're having critical issues and critical challenges is at junior and middle management, where it's fluctuating between 23% to 25%. And mainly because of the promotions that are happening internally, that when positions are internally, you find you're recycling more of your staff internally. You promote, then you create vacancies at lower levels and so on. And as you see those, your vacancy levels then fluctuate around that. But we're not worse off compared to the public service. And at senior management level, it's around 10%. And to address all these issues, there are plans that we've put in place in terms of dealing with them. But our worst case scenario is with the care skills, as the honorable member has said, the social workers, the nurses, the doctors, and so on, those people that we need to find, the rehabilitation is around 58%. And we have developed a retention strategy, a care skills retention strategy to deal with that, which has already been implemented. And as early as 2 days ago, yesterday and last week, we've been in negotiations with some of the people that we needed to retain, with some doctors looking at the personalized case and so on, those who want to join the department. And we are implementing part of the strategy already in terms of that. And we are also partnering with tertiary institutions and other providers to provide for the implementation of our retention strategy. So, Chairperson, all I can say around issues of retention and the issues that were raised, we've got a strategy that we are driving, that we are implementing, and I think we are having some successes. But as it was stated, generally, some of the skills that we are requiring in the department are the scarce skills in the country as a whole. So we compete with the other agencies, even with the business sector, on some of the skills that we require. Thank you very much.
Going to take them to the next round is Mr. Mawate. Oh, sorry, that.
Chairperson, my question was not answered. I didn't hear. My question was around of the 25 years contract was not answered. Yes.
Yeah, let me remind them. Nengwenya is saying that in Scopa, it came out that members of the, when the contract was signed between the department and this two private companies, members of the Department of Correctional Services are now director and working in that in those two private prisons. Now, May Winnie Gwenya's question is, what is the status? Again, you want that answer? Yeah, who is those people? Okay. Yeah, with the building of the new prison. We must not repeat the same mistake by building the other seven prisons, that people who is sitting with the contractors or with the tenders must become owner and part and parcel of this seven prisons, like these two, the Mangaung one and the Limpopo one. That is your question, ma'am. Yeah.
Contract. Is the same members that are on that Busasa contract?
Jefferson, I can respond to the issue raised in terms of the two private facilities they do have, in terms of the one in Mangaung and the other one is in Makaru. Jefferson, yes, it is correct that some of the members designed for correctional services and working for those two private companies. We also have to realize the fact is that we do render correctional services, and those people have to recruit some of the staff. We are well aware of the fact. It is a matter of concern of us, and during the process of those two contracts, there was not an agreement that was necessary to sign from our staff members that prevented them from joining this private facility, so these private companies. And we've learned from that experience. In terms of this new process, there will be definitely a clause that people that will be involved will not be able, there should be a cooling off period, as referred to the GPSA guidelines, not actually then to join private companies, all companies to actually enter into agreements with government departments specifically. And we're well aware of the fact that we will not actually keep to that. The repetition of that situation that we experienced.
And it's not only people who have joined there. People are owners now, directors. It's not an ordinary member working there. It's people that were sitting with the tender and negotiating this two prisons that is now the owner. And the director of and that is our concern, that it mustn't happen. It must be a clean thing, and the playing field must be level to all the people in that. That is Mahote, and then Baba Fika and Bishop Tolo and Nkosi Kolo.
Thank you.
have sent Shepherds and Shepherds, and let me start by making a follow-up on this that he was official. For me, I did not get this specific on the wedding of official. The last time when we visited Jimmy, in our report, we also made a recommendation about wedding of officials, specifically in Jimmy. Those officials that have gone through the vetting now, in Simet part of them. And if yes, has that happened before this incident that has taken place in Simet? Also, Chairperson, in the acting commissioner talked about steps taken, about compliance by management. I think in the past report, the then commissioner kept on telling us about managers who do not manage. How is this compliance by managers going to take place? How is it going to be implemented? About the improvement of security again. The biometric system roll out. In how many centers has that taken place? I need specifics on that. And about escape, the coalition with members. We keep on hearing that there are coalitions with members. It has taken place, but we do not get the results there. Can at some point we get results of those members that collude with the inmates in this estate that are being mentioned. Let me stop there and make a follow-up.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. Firstly, let me deal with the question of old prison. You know, why not take a lift from a hotel? You know, once a hotel becomes old and it needs a rehabilitation, it needs a rebuilding, a renovation, it's downgraded. They say it was a 5-star at one time, then it becomes 3-star or 2-star until it is renovated up again. Now, with correctional service now, let's take the Johannesburg prison, right? Where you've got serious offenders that are there. It means a high risk prison. And yet it is an old prison. Right? So it means now there's more risk. There are more chances of escape in that prison because it is old. Now, I'm saying therefore that why then, once a prison, even if it was a maximum prison at one time, once it becomes older and there are more risk of inmates escaping, then it must be downgraded. It means people who have committed serious offense must be taken off from the prison so that it becomes a prison for medium, for minor offenders. Now, I'm looking at Johannesburg prison. It is in the center of town, you know. There's more risk for kids there than any other. But you go to that prison we were at Baba, what is it? It wasn't the that prison was the palace for it. That is it. Nothing safe. It's far away from town. So it's very difficult for an inmate to escape there, yeah. Because it's far from town. There's no communication with the people inside. Because it means it's more secure than any of the prisons. You go to St. Albans prison is far from town. Also, and it's more secure. Now, these prisons that were original Muslim prisons that are in time center of town and become dilapidated, why don't you downgrade them to medium prisons, so that you take those inmates who are were committed serious offences to other prisons, stronger prisons, that have all the necessary facilities in there. But that is my suggestion. The second one also, you know, in these prisons, you don't get any mention of how you deal with inmates when they are at night, when they are there at night. Because that is the time where they are free to do anything to abuse other prisoners. Now, that is what is happening in prison now. Now, it means now the question of cameras now becomes very critical in prison. So that these prisons must have cameras so that they are monitored by workers, even if it's at night, even if he cannot move around the prison, but as long as he is able to see what is happening inside the prison, because that is when a lot of evils are happening here in prison now. A lot of people, a lot of young people, a lot of inmates who are newly coming in prison are corrupted, and that is where that's why we say the prison now becomes people, they just graduate in crime because of that looseness, that control that is not there. I think those are some of the points. Now, also, the question of rehabilitation, you know, you find the situation there, let's say at St. Albans prison, there is a project there that has become a white elephant. But there is a potential, if that project has all the skilled people who are trained, who are doing all that work there, these inmates can always go there instead of sitting the whole day and doing nothing in many of these prisons. So that project can be the center for training and skilling all the inmates around, that is in the Eastern Cape, so that they go there for training. I think one thing is that you are saying that there is a scarcity of skilled people. Why don't you train the inmates themselves to be skilled so that they train other prisoners who go there in that project, so that project is lifted up again now? I think that is that point I wanted to raise. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to give all the members their chance to have, but keeping in mind that we are having just two six documents. Just took the briefing document still there. It's Bishop Tolo and then Nkosi Gold.
There is a comrade chair that says you must protect me. He's standing next to me. That's the problem. Chairman, you know, I just went back to the point raising about the document. You know, last week on Tuesday, I was saying in the committee, the point you raised about the kind of document, I was saying, Jefferson, it's like departments that don't even respect him. I was saying, you see, they're going to again happen and happen and happen. Now today is better. I think as a committee, we must come together as a committee to see what we can do. Because this thing is always, you can talk. But if we can see and look, we are going to find where the problem lies on this document to come next in our committee. Tuesday, you are today. Today is the Tuesday. It's empty. And another thing, Commissioner, education, sports, recreation, arts, culture, and skills development program. You know, I like this art and culture. And, you know, if you visit the prison, people who like the culture or the song of culture, you know, and dancing, I like it. I'm telling you. If you go look at Mozambique, it's next to my home base where the baby majority are. But when you come inside the prison, you get the real teaching. The dancing, the doing things, songing and so high, and starting to sing about child and all this is very, very important. But I think this environment also, they must also encourage some other, I'm not saying the MSA, but I'm trying to say it's very important from other people also to try to encourage them to think about their culture, because it's very, very important. I'm a baby, I never saw the baby speaking, dancing, the baby, just don't even take care. But the Zulu people, you enjoy. And when you arrive there, and I like
that. But not in Kwaita and doing their thing there in Kwaita.
That's right. And another thing from the chairperson, well, you know, always I've got a problem about it. The 1.2 billion discussed by the committee during 2016 within the baseline of the department, or it's part of the budget that has been removed by the department of within baseline. Another thing is it's worrying me as a individual, because they were telling us in the meeting the department was there, and the minister was there. Himself, the minister, will say there is a 1.2 billion. Now, I just want about the district and capital to understand about this kind of problem. And another thing, Chairperson, in that place, in Johannesburg, in Palma, that place in Palma, what is the name of it? Leukopia. The place where they say they're going to build a prison there, they're talking about frog there. You know, where I came from is a rural area. Those things are there. What even when I'm sitting there, just going up and down here, and I'm going to look there. Those things are not the dangerous. I'm telling you, they're not dangerous like a snake. If we can maybe talk about snakes, not a joke. Where I came from, the Limpopo. Because I'm in rural area, and at night when you sit outside for the night, you come to look at food, and I'm looking and I'm enjoying it, because there are a lot of danger sometimes, and so on. But why they say it's problem about those kind of things? Why? Just they are not dangerous, those kind of things. They are not dangerous. Why they say to build a prison on that place?
Thank you, Chairperson. I won't keep you long, I promise. On page 9, under social integration, reintegration, the department speaks of a pilot and implement classification tool for professionals and parolees. Can they just throw some light in that, please? And on page 10, under challenges, they speak of an increased participation of offenders in program. What is that supposed to mean? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr.
No, thanks, Chairperson. I've got this one.
Okay, alright.
I hope so. Can I deal with my question?
Yes,
please. Yeah. Sir, you see, I was going through this vote 19. And I think we did touch the rehabilitation of the offender. I think it's related there. What I wanted to find out, because we are normally told of the tools that were not there to implement this program. Are we having these tools now to implement? That's the question.
Before the department responds, I want to add what Ndatema or Dev asked about scale and the figure. You see, in page 7, you are saying reduce incidence, page 7. Reduce incidence of escape and assault by 10% of previous financial year. 10% of what? What is the figure of escapees and assault? 10% of what? You see, it's fine here, 10%. And I want to, just want to add what Mr. Mahote has asked, so that we must know. Last year it was escapes was 300. I'm making an example, 300. Now 10% of 300 is 30, Mr. Delschner. So that is the question. Yeah.
Over to you, but I don't think, are you going to go page by page with this big one as well?
No.
Okay, it's only this one.
Yeah.
All right. Now that's fine. You can start.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Not everybody finds the bullfrog friendly. thank you, Chairperson. If I can start with the Honourable Member Maude's question on compliance. We, as we said in the introduction, we are going to be vigilant in terms of compliance this year, and I think government-wise. But when you want people to comply, you also need to make sure that they are trained on what they need to do. Then once they are trained and they are clear guidelines of their functioning, then government has instruments, the performance agreement for managers. Every manager enters into a performance agreement with a supervisor where the key result areas are clearly outlined and the indicators of the achievement of the different activities. So we are going to be using that so that supervisors must be able to identify very early whether there's compliance or not. But Chairperson, it's the monitoring and evaluation. Once non-compliance is found, what maybe has been weak is the consequences. So there needs to be consequences. I think there's been question, what do you do when there's collusion and so on? We need to have definite actions that are taken and be vigilant in terms of consequences. If a manager, there are provisions according to the senior manager's handbook of what needs to be done when there is non-compliance and when there is poor performance. So all we need to do is to implement that. And there are provisions right up to the lowest level in the department. And every member of the department has a job description. But also there's a performance work plan every year. And there must be evaluation. There are specific dates, but there must be on-the-job monitoring, day-to-day monitoring. There are tools and documentation that is to assist us. So we need to be really vigilant as managers and be responsible and accountable. Because I think what was said, as the honourable members were saying, was that that high-level review doesn't seem to be happening. So there must be reports and there must be consequences. Then the other question, I think the honourable member Fisha really was giving us guidance that we need to be considering this thing, and it's important. But also in terms of skills, we are reaching out to tertiary institutions, universities, to see whether students can come and do internships and assist us. And we are having some agreements with some of them. They are starting to assist us. There was also a question on the arts and culture. Also, I think it's a comment, but it's important to say we have a dedicated directory that is looking at sports, recreation, arts and culture. Choral music is one of them, but also the traditional dancing and so on is part of it, but also art, because there are offenders who, rather than going to school, they would do art. And the artifacts, we usually see the displays that are there during different occasions.
and I will respond to the last one on my side, but the team will also respond. There was a question asked, these probationers and parolees stratification tools. You know, when they are parolees, we are revising all these tools. We started with the inside one, the sentence one. But the parolees, as you leave, let's say you were serving life, your classification, and depending on the category that you were classified when you're inside, as you go outside, the classification will be different than a person who had maybe stolen bread or something. So there has to be classification as well. As they are sentenced by the court into community correction, and that's where it comes in, and also those who are leaving, there must be classification and categories that are different. The increase in participation was also raised as an issue. I think many honorable members have been saying that offenders must not be idle. They must participate in programs. So increasing them, they need assessment. You know, sometimes maybe they are not interested in programs because nobody has sat down with them and found out their exact needs. And then entering into a sentence plan, that assists us to put them in the different programs. So hopefully we'll be increasing. Also when having a structured day, the number of participation will then hopefully increase in that way. And the last question that will be addressed by myself is the truth. The honorable member was saying, do we have these truths now? Maybe I can just explain. We had to have different tools for assessment, and these had to be developed and piloted in several areas and tested, because we need to look at the risks and the needs of the offenders in order to inform our profile. We profile the categories of offenses, but also profiles for in terms of programs and the other services that we need to provide inside the correctional facilities. But the answer is yes, the tools are ready. They have been tested and piloted and finalized and approved and ready for implementation. Thank you, Chairperson. I will allow other members to add.
Chairperson, thank you. I'm going to start with your question at the end and then touch on a couple of others. On the issues of these tests, if one looks in the draft strategic plan on page 63 of it, you'll find there that we have combined the percentage with an actual number. In page 63, under the security program, our strategy implementation plan B1.1.1 is to consolidate data relevant for and reduce incidents of security threats within centers and safety of the staff, including service providers, centers, and the public. Our year one indicator is that reduction of escapes by 10%. Compared to the previous year. In other words, we would be aiming in the coming financial year to have fewer than 112 escapes. If you look at the bottom of this page, then the reduced reported incidence of assault compared by 10% compared with the previous year. In other words, we would be aiming for fewer than 1,160 assaults, which seems to be a vast number of assaults that were tested against the offender population. 158,000. So we've included in the strategic plan both the percentages as well as then the indicator against the previous year. So we would then be able to ensure that as we review the strategic plan each year, we're able to look at what the figure was for escape for the previous year and therefore cascade it through to what that particular target would be for the coming year. So I hope that deals. I don't have the total figure for the escapes that have taken place this year. And what I wanted to suggest to the portfolio committee in relation to that was that we should come to do and provide you with a report on the escapes that have taken place during this financial year, including then the details, for example, of the question around the vetting of people in CMAC from the previous. The previous instance, so we can actually comprehensively say, in relation to these elements of the effects and the assaults within, this is where we were in 2006. I don't have the figures at my disposal at this point in time, but I think that it would be a useful interaction
to give a comprehensive report on that, including then unpacking where any of the investigations have, what they have delivered, either in terms of recommendations for corrective steps or disciplinary processes or criminal charges. The other element that I just wanted to bring in, which was brought to my mind by the comment and contribution of Honourable Member Fischer, part of what the regional commissioners have been doing in relation to addressing the creating enabling conditions for rehabilitation is looking at the challenges of where they have particular services, where they have particular problems. In the Gauteng region, for example, there's a project called Operation Death Set, which is aimed specifically at addressing the situation in Joburg Correctional Centre, enabling within the region to then look at shifting inmates out of Joburg Correctional Centre into other spaces that are possibly more secure than Joburg is currently. So there are elements of being able to ensure that we put the appropriate categories of offenders where there are the best facilities for those offenders, but also be able to ensure that where we have limited resources, we're able to put the group of people who best need those facilities, those resources in those facilities. So there's already a process at regional management level of being able to address that aspect.
Thank you very much. We are going to take a 5-minute break, stretch break, and then I'm going to say 5 minutes, not 6 minutes, 5 minutes. And then, Mr. Mawata, I see your hand is up.
On this thing, because there's also an outstanding thing about the website in my case taking. Does it fall outside this security here on this or not?
The Westville inmate tracking system where 7 million rand went gone. We will ask Memareka to respond to that because it's very much important to deal with the budget and not to know what happened to 7 million of the previous year. It's a very serious concern. I'm happy that Mr. Mawate is raising that. But can you respond to Mr. Mawate?
I'm not sure that we're clear on exactly what the question is.
I just wanted to show, to know, Shepherdson, if that information, will we get the explanation in one of the presentations that are going to take place here? Does it fall under the security that the presenter gave?
We could certainly ensure that is included in it, that in relation to any of the investigations, high-profile investigations around escapes or security breaches, and that would obviously fit into that category. So we will ensure that we do address that.
5 minutes break and then Mr. Self is also being summoned by the leader to be in the office. Now Mr. Self will tell them that I'm available for the chat.
I must thank the deputy commissioner for Mr. Vadi. This meeting was very disciplined, very cool. Now you are coming and disrupting our meeting. Please, Mr. Vadi. So I am saying that. I want to thank the Deputy Commissioner for this presentation. We are going to go now to the next presentation, and I know Mema Reka will run through it, but Jabu has said that we are going into monies now. there is no running and running, because we are dealing now with rents and cents. I agree with you, Sis Jabu. But let me hand over to the deputy commissioner, the acting commissioner. The acting commissioner, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. As you said, our first presentation will be on the strategic plan. Now we are going to present the estimate of the National Expenditure 207, and Ms. Mareka will be taking us through. And this is now about money, Ms. Mareka, so don't listen to the running part. But we have to be cognizant of the time, Chairperson, to allow the honorable members to ask questions as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before that, the two members who have joined us now are also members of the portfolio committee, Mr. Burgess and Mr. Vardy. They attended their apology because they are from the intelligence committee that side. They attended. They informed me about. They will join us later, and they are here now. We are at the second week. We're briefed by, I hope that you are having the documents, both documents, yeah. So we are now going to the estimates of national expenditure. Ma'am Mareka, over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Commissioner. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members. We'll be dealing now, Chairperson, with the estimates of national expenditure for the NTF starting 2007-08. To 2009-10. What one must highlight, what Mr. Shana was presenting, is the five-year strategy that the department presented to the committee. But with regard to rents and cents, we're still operating on a three-year basis. But if you look at our strategy plan, we do have a strategy implementation plan to actually look at the alignment of budgeting and planning, as Ms. Shana also highlighted in her presentation. It is an issue that is ongoing, that we're forever trying to find a balance between the strategy, between the business plan, and also between the investment, so that we can be able to achieve the set objectives and get the desired output. The presentation will be looking basically at the principles that we've applied in calculating the allocation, looking also in more detail around the economic classification, the principles, and informing the members in terms of what cost drivers did we actually use to actually come to the figures across the program, and also inform the committee with regard to the baseline before reduction. This MTF is quite unique in the sense that if you look at what was tabled in the ENE, was directed by the Minister of Finance. What is particular in correctional services is that we have funds that have been reduced over the MTF period. But those are not concrete in the sense that if we do indicate the spending capacity, the discussion will be open between the department and also National Treasury. And also we'll then highlight what reductions are approved by the Minister's Committee on Budget, and also what is it that was reinstated back. We will put overall reduction over the MTF, and some figures, not the total amount used, they were reinstated to our baseline figures. And what additional funding was granted to the department based on the spending proposals that we sent to National Treasury and the MTEC. And also we then go further in terms of those net funding, what is it that we've allocated per program and what is it that we've allocated per government financial services. And in terms of the broader principles, we're looking at the zero-based budgeting in terms of the guidelines set by the budgetary processes of the government. But it is not all issues or all items whereby you can safely apply that. So what we're having is a combination of the two. Zero-based in the sense that if you budget for your capital works, you will go into detail to say that for me to be able to actually build Kimberley, how much is it going to cost me, what maintenance must I have in terms of budgetary. And then in terms of equipment as well, if you say, for example, budgeting for X-ray scanner, we therefore would do zero-cost basic budgeting. How much is this last piece of equipment going to cost me? And also new services, those that have not been in the previous financial years, therefore they are not covered in our baseline. That's why we do zero-cost budgeting. But in terms of all other items, we look at historical data. We cannot discount that because it does exist. And then we take into account the cost drivers our core service manager is the inmates and also the numbers and also the personal numbers we take that into account in especially do our budgeting. And an indication of inflation rate that must be provided, that one will take tune from what is provided to us by National Treasury. We provided 45% inflation rate over the NPF, and also that must also be able to provide for price fluctuations of whatever we are paying. The prices are not fixed and stated. In terms of key cost drivers, as I've indicated, we've got the personal total, we've got inmates, including the our two trials, the total, the probationer and parolee population, and also the strategic intentions in terms of saying that what is it that is driving the department, taking the tune from the draft strategic plan of the department, and we try to incorporate that when we go through the budget processes. But ultimately, Honorable Chair, one must be cognizant of the fact that the resources are not unlimited. So whatever we need to be achieving, we therefore need to be realistic in terms of saying that we've got a set figures, we do have approved baseline figures that have been provided to the department. So all of this above there will be reconciled back to the allocation letter that is finally given to the department, approved it from the Ministerial Budget Committee. Secondly, Honorable Chair, with regards to going into detail how we've gone about, also, I think this will also answer some of the questions that have been raised by the Honorable Members. In terms of our personal staff, in terms of the allocation letter, there is an indication that in the 07-08 financial year, at least the staff complement of the department must be around 45,774 members. The 45,774 members is made up of currently what we have as finance staff members in the department currently this financial year, being 39,013. But we have indicated before, as Mrs. Shona's presentation, that the 7-day appointments we had, appointments made around October amounting to 2,727. If you remember, it was a 3-year phase in approval of the 7-day establishment. And the last leg in terms of that 3-year process is appointments that have been made during this month of March for 07-08 financial year, the last of 2627. In total, we are supposed to be discounting the attrition that normally everything stands still, are supposed to be at a target of 8,111 for 7-day establishment appointments. But then over and above those initiatives, we do have plus minus 118 officials. Saying plus minus at the time of drafting the ESE, we had the rand value, but the numbers are still not fixed because in terms of the prioritization of which posts that are unfunded, that we could fund the available funding. And then we have 454 plus minus members that we needed to over the 07-08 financial year to appoint to actually beef up the staff capacity of the Big Five Correctional Centers. The Big Five Correctional Centers being Crossley, Johannesburg, Pretoria, Portsmouth, and Durban West Rand. And then also, if you remember the last ENE, we had the allocation for the implementation of the white paper. For personnel, we had 60 million rands allocated for the white paper, but we do have the carry through cost and we do have an additional 57 million that we'll be getting. And out of that 57, we had estimated that probably we'll be able to buy 300 capacity with regards to increasing our members. And we wanting Chairperson to actually enhance the junior management level in terms of supervisory capacity. So if you look at the 7-day establishment, we bring on board 8,311 members at the new recruits, which is your operational level. But then we didn't enhance the supervisory level to say, bringing on board 8,311, actually it means you are increasing the base of the ratio between your operational staff and your supervisor. So we wanting to beef up that level, and we're estimating that we'll be able to bring on board 525 members at supervisory level. As I've indicated, Jefferson, it is 454 posts for Johannesburg, Portsmouth, and Pretoria Crossley Centers, and 118 for head office, which we indicate in the rent value. And also in terms of the rent value, we have spread those across administration programs, corrections program, and development program. And in terms of head office, the 118 posts, we are having 32.3 million. In terms of the Big Five Correctional Center, this is 73.4 million.
And in terms of the second phase of the white paper, implementation of the white paper, remember the first phase was 2006-07, the current financial year is 60 million rand, but in terms of now the 07-08 is for the 57 million, just to boost the capacity with regard to the implementation of the white paper. Going in detail in terms of now our compensation of employees, what we have done, NAFACRA did give us an indication with regards to what percentages should be budgeted for annual salary assessment. For 07-08, it's 46%, 8-9, 5%, and 9-10, financially 5%. And over and above those 6-5-5 percentages, we are increasing each year by 1% in terms of the notch increases. The notch increases basically take into account the performance of members. This is not a general rule that everyone gets. It is based really on performance. If you look
at page 4, the members, just say page 1, that's page 1, so that the members must catch you up.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. We are on page 4, still on the compensation of employees. We have made provision for the medical aid of our staff members. It's one note from the SCOPA hearing, the whole issue around pension, as you call continuation members. We have budgeted 8,200 of them at a cost of 1,525 each. And in terms of members that are currently in the department, that is serving members, we are aligned to the general public service in terms of 2/3, 1/3 maximum government contribution of 1,014 per member. And in terms of EGM, so generally the government is the medical aid scheme, we have not as a department fully migrated, because some small number of members that have migrated, that we have not been able to cost at the time of going for the budgetary allocation. But any amount additional to the department migrating to GEMS, those discussions will be resuscitated with National Treasury. With regard to overtime, we've made provisions according to the staff establishment for overtime, that is within establishment, and we've provided for the requirements of the collective agreement that was concluded 29th of April in 2005. In terms of that collective agreement, Saturday we compensate by off-duty, and we only pay Sunday a time in effect. But in effect from 1st of April 2008, for 7-day establishment, the 3-year phase expires March 2008. So April 2008, we're supposed to be, as a department, fully implementing the 7-day establishment. In this regard, we'll be aligning ourselves as a department to the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, which is Section 16, which determines that if Saturday is a normal working day, then for Sunday, we pay a time and a half. Currently, in terms of collective agreement, it's a time and a half for Sunday. But in terms of the current arrangement, public holidays, we're not paying for them. But if we align ourselves in 2008, April, according to the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, we'll be paying double pay for public holidays. So those are the differences in terms of the current arrangement, wherein we've got the collective agreement, and also in terms of the department aligning to the Basic Conditions of Employment Act when we fully implement the day establishment. In terms of pension provision, as a department, we provide 16% employer contribution according to the different salary notions of our members. That is done fully. Performance bonus, chairperson, is made a provision of 1.5% of the basic salary as a provision. It does not necessarily say that 1.5% will equal to all, but it is still based on performance of members. Housing allowance, we've taken the total staff membership and also provided 60% of that staff membership that they will then probably, people that doesn't currently enjoy that benefit, may buy houses and therefore qualify for the homeowner's allowance. In terms of the service bonus, it is a 1 month full salary based on the salary of each member that is fully provided to the. In terms of the allowances that we're able to allocate per capita, we had to base at the time, but we needed to finalize the figures, provide in all that. We used October figures, October 2006 figures. We used provided for the capital remuneration, the employer bargaining council, leave discounting. Leave discounting basically, if I complete 20 years service, I would qualify but one has got to apply for automatic to become 10 days. If I complete 30 years of service, government service, I would qualify to discount 15 days. But at the end, when I exit the department, those 15 days that I've encashed, they don't resuscitate. So we've already sort of cashed them now. So it does take government somehow when members do, but at the time of exiting the department, we'll be calculating those days at a higher salary note than currently. Through the payments, as and when we're getting them, we have applied for those. We've also, chairperson provided for the interim promotion. If the committee remembers, we did indicate that there is an interim promotion is supposed to be finalized in the full implementation during the course of 06-07. The promotion for 5-6, from level 5 to level 6, 2022, and the promotion from level 6 to level 7, 229 members, that is taken into account in line with the relevant salary notice. With regard to goods and services, basically we're using the direct costs in terms of the different cost drivers, the inmate population, our trials, detainee population, probationers, parolees, and then would therefore apply the relevant unit costs. Normally those unit costs are historical data that we then put the international provision of 5%. In direct expenditure new services, we base normally those on the new prices and the tariffs and quotations that we, at the time of budgeting, source from the different sectors in the private sector. Accommodation, this is a municipal services budget. The figures allocated to us, earmarked, are figures as indicated in the allocation letter from National Treasury, funds that have been devolved from Department of Public Works to the department. But one must note, Honorable Chair, that we are still not able to verify those allocations because we have the funds devolved to the department, but the function is still carried by public works, so we're not able therefore to say that amount of money is over, is it equal to, or is it under allocated. But as an instance, it's supposed to be on a cost recovery basis, as and when public works take on a quarterly basis the bills to the department. Buildings and other structures will be based on cost and space norms. Transfers and subsidies, labor gratuity to offenders based on new tariffs and previous number of that may qualify of those inmates. Indigent gratuity, which is basically, Honorable Chair, the material assistance upon release of inmates to offenders based on new tariffs and also the previous number that may qualify. Then we've got a successor, basically that one, it is compliant to the Skills Development Act, 1% of 10% of basic salary. We are complying with the traditional recruitment. We do estimations as provided by management accounting, by the head, finance, and SEOs in terms of price, tariffs, and quotations. But in terms of the new standard chart of account, what is included under that item would be any piece of equipment or machinery that is above 5,000 rand per item. If it is less than 5,000, we don't capitalize it, but we put it under current expenditure, under goods and services, so it won't appear under machinery and equipment. The cost drivers, Honorable Chair, first in terms of the offender population, we have made some projections with regard to the MTF process, first in terms of the detained inmate population and also in terms of the probationer parolee population. And with regard to our own facilities, that is DGS facilities, we've projected 152,548 inmates in terms of inmate population, going to 155,148 over 2019. With regard to the two private facilities, we have bed space, which is 5,952, so we're just taking those because the space it is as the prison was constructed, giving us a total inmate population of 168,500 in 07-08, rising to 161,100 in 09-10. With regard to probationer parolee population, we estimated 60,978, rising to 62,400, and the Triple T would not have those that qualified or that would be probationer parolee from the Triple T, specifically the DCS competences, giving us therefore the 60,900 and the 62,400 over 9-10. What we must be able to note, Chairperson, is that the daily average inmate population information is based on our admission and release system that we have in the department, the management information system, that is an average calculated from April 2006 to September 2006. So we took the average, extrapolated for the financial year and then have our projections. In terms of the daily average supervision case population, we also use statistics from the same system, which is the additional release system, and calculated the average from April 2005 to end of December 2005. Because at the time of us constructing the figures, that was the latest information that has been captured and verified within the department. But what one must note is that after the remission that happened in 2005, we had an inmate population decreasing within the department. That I will go to in the other slide, but also among that seem to be over allocated in terms of our budget, because remember we're basing most of our expenditure on the per capita of inmate population. So if therefore your numbers are going down, it's supposed to be affecting directly your allocation. So there is an amount that has been suspended in that regard, or that has been resisting our budget in that regard. With regard to the cost drivers, what we are indicating specifically is that we do this projection, but we need therefore to give each region a pro rata of the estimated, because this is not actual figures, this is estimated figures. But in doing that, we therefore take the current financial year and then pro rata what has been projected for each region, so that we can be able to equitably allocate to regions and not have an uninformed way of allocating figures or resources to regions. With regard to the baseline chairperson of the department, that is before the reduction. We had, if you look at our allocation of 6% which are given the MTF process figures, we had the 10.6 billion for year 2006-07, the current year, rising to 11.7 billion in 7-8, 12.4 billion in 8-9, up to 13.3 billion in year 9-10. But then we had reductions in our baseline. And our reductions in the baseline were around three areas mainly. The first one, it is our infrastructure program, which is our facilities, the construction and the other projects. The second one, it is around compensation of employees. The third one that I've mentioned earlier on, it was regarding the offender-related reduction, based squarely on the reduced numbers that initially before the remission, we had projected a rise in our figures. After remission, there was a decrease, but still projecting a rise in our figures. If I may start with the first one, the capital works program. The capital works program, what has been suspended, what has been taken away from the baseline, reduced from our baseline, is an amount of 1 billion in 7-8, 1.1 billion in 8-9, 1.2 billion in 9-10. What sparked that reduction, Chairperson, was that as a department, treasury left in our baseline the allocation for construction of facilities, but we were not able to construct. It's only Kimberly that started sometime in October, November. So then there were discussions between the department and treasury. But if you look also in terms of our previous appropriation statement, we have been saving and surrendering the money there to treasury. During the month of September, we did surrender an amount of about 157 million around the capital works program back to National Treasury. So therefore, we department and also National Treasury then did some calculations in terms of saying that we better surrender because they're not able at this stage to spend the money rather than to keep the money and not spend it. Compensation of employees, if you recall again, we have through the journalist that is trying and this we alluded to around the vacancy levels in the department. Over the about 2-3 years past, we were not able to fully spend what has been allocated for compensation of employees. We have an allocation because we do say that in terms of our establishment funded vacancies, we're supposed to be having so many psychologists, so many finance people, so many supply chain, so many medical practitioners, but we are not able to do have 100% full staff complement. We therefore had 750 million across the 3 years suspended or reduced in our budget to be able to demonstrate spending capacity before we can be able to go back. Again, around the compensation of employees, if I may, what we agreed with National Treasury is that we project that we'll maintain a 5% vacancy level. Because the center was indicating that currently we're sitting at 7% vacancy level. So we need the budget department to fast track the processes so that we're able to meet the 5% target. If we meet the 5% target, therefore, everything else required, we should be able to fully utilize the community 7%. But at any point in time, if we're above the 5%, then we're running into a red light of not spending the full allocation given to us around the compensation centers. So what you see in the baseline around salaries is basically after maintaining a 5% vacancy level for 7-8, a 5% vacancy level for 8-9, and a 3% vacancy level in 9-10. The offender related 143 million, around 150 million, and 158 million based specifically on the statistics. That after remission, though the previous baseline figures were based on a higher number, but it was not reduced number, so therefore we needed to get those reduced. But the understanding between the department and the National Treasury is that at any point in time where offender population figures are above what we projected in the baseline, we'll go back to them and renegotiate in terms of them supplementing the difference between what would be above and what has been figured for in the business. What has been reinstated, Honorable Chair, after the reduction around compensation of employees is an amount of 227 million that has been reinstated, as I've indicated. It is clearly based on the fact that we'll be able, the department, to maintain the 5% vacancy level over the next 2 years and 2% in the outer year. Capital, what has been reinstated is 553 million round to 610 million in the baseline. Basically, that amount that has been reinstated, it is current contractual obligations with regards to our renovations and maintenance program. With regards to the construction of the new facilities, those are not catered for in what has been reinstated. The arrangement is that let's get these processes right. When we're ready to spend, we'll go back to National Treasury. So those will be additionally allocated to the department, like Kimberley. Kimberley's projections are not part of that 765. But in 67, we've got an amount allocated for Kimberley, which I must indicate that we'll request a rollover of that. So in terms of what will be actually spent in that amount, we won't be able to fully utilize. But over and above that, we would need extra funding to fund Kimberley. That would be separate negotiations, so we'll be able to demonstrate that spending capacity before Treasury and be able then to get the relevant funding. So as and when we're rolling out the new generation correctional center, we need therefore to go back and reopen discussions and deliberations so that we are able not to hold money within the department, but to be able to get what we'll be able to spend given our capacity to spend. When the Minister of Finance tabled the ENE before Parliament, the amount that has been sort of reduced from correctional services, it has been reprioritized again. Reprioritized within DCS in terms of what I'm saying are reinstatement, and also reprioritized in terms of additionally allocating within the DCS cluster, and reprioritized in terms of whatever variants that will be allocated outside the DCS cluster. So there are other clusters that this benefit from the reduced amount. With regards to the allocation letter, Honorable Chair, we did receive over and above these reductions and reinstatements. Now, we're talking about new initiatives that we did submit spending proposals before Treasury, and we did get funding for. The first one, it is a master information systems plan that Mr. Sam was referring to. We received funding, 35 million, and it did indicate that it is a comprehensive plan, it is an 8-year plan. But in terms of the NCS processes, we've got 35 million support, rising to 100 million in 9-10, around the improvement of the security systems in the department. We've got 100 million over the 3 years, basically to look at access control and access scanners. In terms of remuneration of health professionals, which is the professional nurses, we secured funding of 17 million, 19 million, and 47 million. This is one government initiative that is not only specific, all departments that have got professional nurses are supposed to benefit
if you reach the Minister of Finance's budget speech. But for DCS, we've got 17 million budget, 47 million in 9-10. We've got the salary adjustments where we're really looking at the improvement of conditions of service in terms of what was provided for and what was actually implemented so that it's supplemented to the department. After all this, Honourable Chair, the baseline figures now, which is after your reductions, reinstatements, and the additional allocations, we have in 679.8 billion, in 78.7 billion, in 89.11 billion, and in 91012.3 billion. The percentage increase is going to be 2%, 9.2% rising, or declining, it's going to be declining. But some of these initiatives have got fuller funding in the first year, depending on what is funded with regards to the different spending plans that are submitted. But in year 9-10, we've got a 7.94 increase from year 2008-2009. As I've indicated, these figures are as solid as our current spending capacity. If we demonstrate better spending capacity around compensation of employees and the infrastructure program, we'll be getting additional allocations. We're going now, Honourable Chair, I won't bring the figures, but we just demonstrated to the committee what is in our EME chapter about 19 around the allocation step program over the NTF year. What you have in year 6-7 is the Kaluwatam Authority and adjusted budget after our adjustment is made in September last year. But in total, it's just the other previous slide. And with regard to the allocation to GFS classification, we are indicating to the committee how much goes for compensation of employees, how much goes for goods and services, interest and rent on land, transfers and subsidies given for capital assets. And all of these is taken into account the principles that I have highlighted initially on the budget. And also the other strategies for the department that we want in to be implementing over the MTF, but taking into account that the strategy is at the settlement and then to the implementation. So when we get to year 2 of MTF processes, we normally then try to bring about what the year would be 2 in the strategy settlement. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Ma'am Mareka. It's 10-1 now. I'm going to give members time to ask questions for clarification, and then we will wrap up the meeting. I saw Menawa's hands and got it all of winning win. Please, Menawa.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is, does this mean that our understanding has shot us in the foot for the money to be transferred or relocated to the cluster? That means if maybe we had spent accordingly, maybe our staff could be getting increase in their salaries than that has been now diverted to the SAPS. The other one is, how much is the department spending on a prisoner per day? Has it increased or is still the same amount as 2006? The other one is, in which areas did the department underspend? In exception of the building of prisons. And the fourth one is, there is still an amount that is available as at January 2007. Amount of 2,636,767. It is now much. Are we still going to have the money not spent as at 31st March? That will be maybe we are interested in the redirection again to other clusters.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairperson, they always say that great minds think alike. She has taken one of my major questions. So I'm no longer going to repeat it. But the second one, Mr. Chairperson, earlier on in the report here, she spoke of her indigeneity, gratuity. I'm a bit lost if she can just explain that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and also thank you for the presentation. Chairperson, when we go to oversight, there was a cry of a promotion on the members, staff members. I wanted to know that this report is going to cover that cry of a promotion in terms of the members that have been working maybe more than 15 years, but that member doesn't get a promotion. In terms of the performance bonus, also there was a cry, and I wanted clarity in terms of the performance bonus, that is, what the criteria that they are using in terms of performance bonus. Who is getting it, who is not getting it, everything. And over time, also, when we go to oversight, there was a cry again in terms of this overtime. I wanted to know that does the management communicate with the staff in terms of all what she has been explaining to us about this overtime, that Saturday, the working day, Sunday. I want to clarify in terms of that. In terms of the medical aid provision, I'm on page 4, Chairperson. Medical aid provision. Chairperson, the DCS expenditure, press particular medical expenditure, was noted by the former auditor, General AG. And the further to have the same problems reported in the past 5 years. In this regard, the DCS has responded that it will address the problems relating to its database and try to monitor and develop the system in the integrating manner. Now, my question is, did the DCS manager to implement its promises and other concerns around matters such as staff with appropriate skills? And did the meeting between the DCS and AG took place in order to resolve some disagreement over the operating various finance lines? 3. What have you done to ensure that a 2007 budget is utilized effectively and with equity, taking into account issues raised by AG? 3. Do you have a meeting scheduled with the AG to look at the 2007 budget with specific attention to internal control expenditure and the management information system? I think we get it.
In fact, I'm looking at your approximation of that you are saying there was a decrease of the population when there was that remission, and it affected your budget, as far as suppose the allocation to correctional service because of that remission and the decrease of population. Now, do you not envisage a situation where the safety and security intensify its arrest people because of this huge allocation to the security? Does that not going to affect now the correctional service? Because there will be a huge increase of ATDs, increase, and therefore the cost will increase. That's right.
When the Minister of Finance, Mr. Chairperson, presented his budget, he left out the Department of the Correctional Services in terms of salary increments for our men and women. Can they possibly tell us why? In case we do oversight visits and our civil servants start attacking us and that's why not doing anything to help them in Parliament, can she possibly give us some sort of shield, how to behave to under them? That's one. Secondly, Mr. Chairperson, it is likely that the current expenditure trends and patterns of the department, various programs such as administration, security, corrections, care development, and everything, to what extent and in what way can the equal trends on spending be explained to reflect justifiable shifts and the department's priorities? Last one, what priorities have you set out to ensure that the budget is equitable, distributed in line with the developmental agenda of the department? The very last one, I promise. Do you believe that the current state of expenditure as on the 31st of January will address the problems around the inadequate facilities of the department in the sense?
Thank you very much for this call. Mr. President?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, on page 6, the labor gratuity and the indigent gratuity, can you give us some idea of what the amount is of? And also whether these figures are audited in any way. Then on the performance bonus, I'm just interested to know whether the department have got written contracts of employment and whether the duties of all the officers or written into the context of employment, or whether there's another way that the department determines on a day-to-day basis what each person working for the department has to do. And this is just in relation to how performance bonuses are determined. Have you got a specific plan as to what each member has to do so that you can determine performance? Thank you, Chair.
Before that, let me ask, and you will answer that in a moment. What is the problem for surrendering? You see, men have also talked about this surrendering of 157 million. Now, last year, last year, there was also funds surrendered to treasury. What is the problem? Maybe if you can explain to us, because if it is capacity, tell us it is capacity that you can't spend this money, because you see, it's a bad reflection
on the department, that the department, instead of using the budget, they are not able to spend that budget. They are rather giving the money back to Treasury. What is the problem in not spending the money?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. With regard to the first question, with regard to understanding whether indeed as a department we should tell ourselves on our feet, it is directly linked to our spending trend, our capacity to spend what is being allocated. The only reason that this amount of money is reduced in terms of our baseline, the only reason that we did surrender funds back to Treasury was sitting down and saying, here's money allocated and voted for TTF. But currently, where is the rate that we spending what has been allocated? Projecting forward, there is no way that we can fully utilize that money. And therefore, we decided as a department, if you look at what was surrendered last year, was department's initiative to surrender back. But the impact thereof is over the NTS, one must be to it. So it is true, Honorable Member, that indeed it is linked to this. But there are dynamics to look at those major components where these monies have been surrendered and where these monies have been reduced in our budget. You look at compensation of employees, I think that is linked to what has been asked by Honorable Chair. We link here with the vacancy level, that may be 7%, but the dynamics within that 7%, as Mr. Zidane has indicated, that once we have a 7% a national department vacancy rate, but if we interrogate the different levels, our middle management level, it is one where we've got serious challenges. If you look at the different skills and the different professionals, our professionals, that's where we've got this 50-something%, I think this is 57-58% vacancy level. And we did indicate that some of these professions, this is not necessarily a DCS peculiar event to have this high vacancy level. We're competing for these classes with other departments, with other provinces in the very same government, with the local government level. And it is common when skills are scarce, people will automatically go to where they will benefit most in terms of funds and things. If local government for a professional nurse attain more than 2,000 and the provincial government, national government is paying them 77,000, it's automatic they will go for these municipalities, for they have demonstrated that this is the buying power that they wanted to demonstrate in the labor market. So we're dealing with such issues. We're dealing with the high turnover when we recruit. Peculiar around supply chain management, we are observing this trend. You appoint today, 6 months down the line, the member that you have appointed in a particular post is gone to another department. So we're dealing with those dynamics that, therefore, once we're closing this gap, they are being reopened because as the civil service, this high competition is attached to this case. So one has got to put into context this dynamics and say, therefore, if you maintain, obviously, a 58% vacancy level for professionals, automatically, that money worth 58%, you can spend. And therefore, we then say, let's start another together. It does not mean that we do not need that money in the department. We do need the psychologists. We do need the social workers. But it is an issue that we've tried to compensate by coming up with this human resource integrated strategy and also our retention, recruitment and retention strategy to say, what is it that we need to be having as a department to be able to first attract these professionals into our sector, not only attract them, but also retain them. So it's going to be a useless exercise to attract people in huge numbers and to my standard, and they're going to another public department, a public service department, or to the local level. So we're really dealing with such issues. As much as South Africa, we're dealing with those same skills going away from the country to others. So it is a higher debate, Chairperson, that one must be able to interrogate fairly when we interrogate these issues. And again, the environment itself to say that
if I'm a social worker, which environment is best for me? Am I best when I'm at social development? Or I'm less stressed when I'm at DCS? Well, I've got to interrogate. But for some people, it is not a money issue. It is the working environment issue. A medical practitioner, would that medical practitioner want to be permanent in DCS? Or would that medical practitioner prefer to be permanent in provincial health department? And therefore, we're competing for such issues. Even if we offer the same amount of money, that cannot guarantee that people will be fully accredited to the department. Some will come, but we need to understand that others will say, I don't care whether you offer me 200,000 for what I will get 80,000 in the department. Your environment is such that I'm not prepared to come to you. Capital Works program in terms of those issues. As Mr. Gillian did indicate, it is a Public Finance Management Act provision that in terms of all major capital works, the accounting officer must ensure that he has done or she has done a feasibility study to be informed whether what approach is cost effective, what approach is best for the department in terms of also the efficiency level. So those issues, necessarily the department and government, normally you would then outsource in terms of getting this transaction advisor for them to actually conduct those feasibility studies. An exercise that is not totally dependent upon DCS doing, but DCS is dependent upon some people's performance before you can be able to take matters forward. So there are issues that CFS and indeed we do agree that if you look also one issue that focus not on compensation of employees. In the risk management committee we also elevated those issues. Both they are posing risk to the department because the minute not operating in terms of your full staff complement, there is an impact in terms of service delivery. So we elevated these issues there and say, let's therefore those issues that are within our own terrain to manage, let's manage them like the turnaround center recruitment up to from auditors in the pool to actually fill in the pool. Because we do have this, one must be honest that we haven't met that norm of 3 months from the post being vacant to the post being filled. So we still, in terms of the whole process, taking more than 3 months to actually get the relevant people into those relevant posts. In terms of the areas of understanding, I think I've tried to highlight that. And with regard to the projections, it's true. Those two main areas, we still projections because much has not come to the end. We still projection transactions in terms of payment, but we have projected that around compensation of employees by March was not fully utilized what has been adjusted allocations. Remember, we surrendered funds last September. And also with regard to our capital works program, we projected that about 158 million or so weren't going to be able to spend. But what we have said preliminary to Trevor is that 158 million against capital works program will request rollover for those funds for Kimberley specifically in terms of that project. But it is not only around REMS that we presenting under expenditure. If you remember the presentation changes that we made to the committee last week, we did indicate that though we're supposed to be billed on a quarterly basis with regard to the devolved funding, that is the municipal services, the other issues, rental of Mr. Accommodation and all that. Currently, the billing system is not up to scratch between the department and public works. We're not receiving these bills timely, so it is one area indeed that we are trying to fill because it's dependent upon public works actually claiming that money before we can pay. It is an issue that we have raised with them and tried to make follow-ups in terms of getting the bills and getting them timely. So I'm saying that those two, but broader two facilities, we do have some dynamics around the billing system that we have some problems with. Around promotions, honorable member, as I've indicated, we did cater to 2007, this current financial year, we did cater for promotion and also in 2008, which is now the final phase of promotion, basically from level 5 to 7, level 6 to 8. But even from those one level to the other 5 to 6 to 7, it is not automatic qualification. It is not automatic that if I'm at level 5, therefore I will automatically jump to level 6. There is set criteria in terms of what is minimum qualifications and other issues in terms of my performance over a period. But in terms of residences, we have taken stock, we have provided for that. For 0607, the last step was implemented in December in the system.
Performance bonuses, they set criteria in terms of who would qualify. It is not everyone, again, for the sake of performance. And what one must understand, if I am employed to change and do guard duties at the gate from Gora to 7 to Gora to 4, and I do exactly that, that doesn't qualify me for performance bonus. Performance bonus is supposed to give incentives to those members that have gone an extra mile. But you do get salary for that work. I do get salary for the work I'm doing. But if I go over what is expected of me in terms of my performance agreement, in terms of my work plan, therefore, that would therefore be recognized in terms of saying that, yes, indeed, you are employed to come to work and pick up the papers. You do exactly that, but you go beyond. You then see how best you can do that. You then go further in terms of how other issues that are over and above what you get the salary on the 15th floor. So sometimes people have got this expectation that if I'm working as a public servant, I automatically qualify for the performance bonus. And this is something that I think we need to intensify our own education program around this issue, so that there is no created expectation. But what, when we do these processes, there is a committee. It is not only your supervisor. Supervisor will start the process and actually say that in terms of this area, this is the rating that I'm giving. But it goes to a moderating committee that actually sees, views what the member has given himself in terms of saying that I'm supposed to be doing this, and I'm doing it, and I go overboard, and the necessary evidence attached, plus what the supervisor would have indicated. So it is a process that is not only one-on-one. It ends there. There is a body that actually tries to normalize the ground. In terms of the overtime issue, as I've indicated, that there was a collective agreement reached in terms of up to the year and 7-8, but from 8-9 when we fully implement the 7-day establishment, we're changing and more compliant to the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. But one honourable chair does take the suggestion and also the recommendation from the honourable member in terms of saying that maybe where we have not done well is fairly communicating that to our members, those that are currently in the system and those that will be joining the department for the department, those who come and go. So we do need, therefore, maybe to intensify our educational program in terms of indicating to members what is it that they must expect in April 2008. It's not that overtime totally is scrapped. There will be overtime, but it will be revised in compliance with the effort. Now it is a 7-day establishment. With regards to the medical aid, as you indicated, yes, indeed, Scopa did raise some issues, and also members in our last session actually did raise some issues with regards to the annual report. But in terms of the budgetary provision, so if you look at the audit report, it was not finding us wanting as a department with regards to not allocating, under allocating, over allocating. It didn't find fault around those issues, but the issues were about verification now, when we actually pay over as a department to the different medical aid, whether it's Medco or Medical, whatever medical aid. Are we sure that we're paying over to Medco what Medco is supposed to be receiving? And in the last presentation we made last week, we did indicate what processes we've tried and trying to set up, because when the department was fully on Medco as a closed scheme, that component was done away with. So we had those relevant members where they've reallocated to certain directories. So what we're currently doing is to ensure that at least there is that unit. And we had reported to the committee that currently we've put a number of contract workers with a project manager also on a contract basis. But the intention, because we are not going to have medical aid provision going away in the service. So we need a permanent staff complement to men so they can be able therefore to verify. We do have it as a basis currently, but as we indicated also in the last meeting, that there is an initiative within the department to actually also get the GPS system, because they do have a current system that is running currently at the government employee pension fund. So that system is going to be deployed to GPS. They are ready GPS to deploy the system. It is only issues of equipment on our side that we need to actually put into place before that system can be deployed. But currently we continue with the contractual arrangement.
with regards to whether the 12-7 budget will be utilized effectively, one is able to do the post-utilization fund to say that I had so much allocated, this is what I've done. Therefore, the different quality assurance, because this is not only Auditor General that comes and say what is it that you have done and you've done it according to what you're supposed to do. We do have internally the inspectorate, the directorate, head office and also enrichment. That go and actually test this issue, even during the course of the year. You do have your internal audit that will come and say, this is what you're supposed to be spending, this is how you have performed. Those reports do hit us as a manager. So in terms of really getting the assurance around this, and also Auditor General will come, and also Auditor Expenditure, they will come and actually do go over and above just the taking process to issues of value for money. And those are the reports that Honorable Chairperson do enhance our doing and our planning and our reshifting and focusing on the thing that what is it that we can best fund with the allocation. In terms of scheduled meetings with Auditor General, in terms of looking at the management information systems and also around strategy, we do have scheduled meetings as we indicated in the last presentation last Tuesday. But basically what we have structured is the audit steering committee, which basically looks at the management letters, the scope of findings, the recommendations from the portfolio committee and so forth. But you do have also what PFMA regulates, the audit committee. Audit committee last year resolved looking at this under expenditure and everything else in terms of what performance is in the department. There was a resolution taken last year to say that over and above the normal agenda of the audit committee, they will also interrogate our spending trend. So on a quarterly basis, we do then present now the expenditure vis-a-vis the budget and the reasons why we're projecting under expenditure, why we're projecting slow expenditure in certain areas. Because in certain areas, not only about under expenditure, it is only about also slow expenditure.
How many answers do you still have, ma'am? You see, I'm very much worried. This members must be in the chamber at 2 o'clock. And I will wrap up with what I want to say. But how many questions are still left? Because I really want to say something about this.
I will touch only on two questions, just two questions. The next one, Honorable Chair, is the issue around the reduction in our numbers, inmate population, as a result of the special remission, and then and the relevant money being reduced, and whether they now have been taken into account the intensification projects and programs that SAPS may be coming up with, and the impact, automatically the either direct impact when SAPS are small, those entities come to correctional services. We have in our deliberations with National Treasury, we also touch on the issues of 2010, that we, the common sense to expect that SAPS will try to intensify certain initiatives. But then, as I indicated in my presentation, the National Treasury stance is saying that, prove those numbers, I will give you the money. So that's totally saying that we'll allow over expenditure as a result of increased numbers. We must qualify that. So any additional expenditure as a result of additional numbers over and above what has been projected in our baseline in terms of inmate population, directly that needs to go back to Treasury, prove from our MIS system that these are the numbers that you're currently having now, and then that relevant funding will be allocated to the Department of Correctional Services. If that occurs during this financial year, there are budgetary processes that can take care of that around the adjustment and budget estimates. The next one, the last one, Chairperson, is around the gratuity for our inmates and the material assistance or indigent assistance. I do not have the figures, Honorable Chair, but we can provide those specifics to say that what amount exactly are we talking about. Because those are two separate gratuities. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for your patience. We've gone over time, but I think it was important. Chairperson, in concluding from our side, thank you very much for offering us the opportunity to present our budget. But Chair, let me also just reiterate that we do regret that the documentation was not in time because it does disadvantage members. We will definitely work on that together with the ministry to ensure that documentation comes on time. And Chairperson, today we presented our budget as well as what we're going to do with the money. I think what remains is the performance on what we have presented, and that is the duty of this Honourable House to do the oversight and ensure that we do exactly what we said we would do today. Chairperson, let me also thank you, the Chair and the Honourable Members, in the interactions and interrogating issues, because in some areas where we thought we are on the right track, I think the questions triggered other issues, and then we had to go in more deep as we go back. As the presenters have said, we'll go back home and factor in the inputs that we have. And I think particularly the question that came out, that are we biting too much? Can we chew what we have bitten? I think that's the question we need to really look, so that when we come back to report, really our mouth should not be full. We should be able to speak because we have swallowed. And finally, Chairperson, we have noted the areas and information that is needed by the Chair and the Honourable Members, and we will make sure that information comes. The other part that we have noted, there are areas that we interrogated that cannot be answered in this manner in such a short time, where we have to come specially and brief the members in full, but remembering that the report must reach the House before we come. Chairperson, thank you very much for the spirit in which you have interrogated the strategic plan and also the budget. And finally, Bishop Dodo, the issue of documentation can never be, because we don't respect the House, we do. And we really appreciate your role. And as we say, we are going to work on that. Thank you.
Acting Commissioner, thank you very much for the presentation for both documentation, all three documents. You know, it's very much unfair for members to get this documentation here in this meeting. It was Friday, but these members were already gone. They came back this morning, last night, because Mondays are constituency days. They don't have time to read. We are busy with a very serious issue here, the budget of the department. And when we can't interact with this budget, we are going to run into serious, serious problems. I appreciate, Commissioner, your assurance that you are giving to us. Anyone who is responsible for this will certainly take the heat, because we are not going to allow this thing to go on and on and on. Every time we must remind that documents must be here in time, so that the people must. You know, we had a Lekgotla as the ANC, and this issue was raised that members are not getting their documents in time, and how can they interact with the department when the documents are not there? But I really appreciate Acting Commissioner. I want to agree with what Skopa has said the other day. We were there, myself, Menawa, Winning Gwenya, and Bishop Dolo, with what Skopa have said, that there's light in the department, and we only hope that this light must stay like that. There's going to be more and more improvements. I mean, these things are happening in the Department of Correctional Services, but I can see that there's an attempt, Acting Commission, to really address these things and to give attention to it. I only hope that we must keep on like that. Lastly, I want to say that from our side, the portfolio committee side, we are there to do our oversight work. We are there to assist the Department of Correctional Services. The work that we are doing is that we are not fighting with the Department of Correctional Services. We are there to really help. If we are pointing out weaknesses, take it in that spirit that we are part and parcel of this big family. We are having a task to do oversight, and that's exactly what we are going to do. Members, thank you very much also for your patience. It's 1:30 now, and Imogen have organized something to eat. We are going to have half an hour, and then we must run to the chamber. But for the ANC component,